said they're all hydroelectric.
So they run in coal plants or new plants?
I haven't gotten that. Then we'll see solar, I think, and wind.
And then there's one right there.
They're like buoys in the ocean. Yeah, but those are just like buoys. They're not just anything that can be used. I think double use is a buoy as well.
I'm sure they'll be excited to get a motion out there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, man.
How's everyone?
Well, 7 o'clock. Please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Gaylord.
Here.
Grunch.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Sansom.
Here.
Town.
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay. First item tonight on our agenda is the consent agenda, and the purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that at any time any items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. And tonight we have appointments and minutes from the previous commission meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve as presented.
Second.
Roll call.
Gaylord.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Town.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Our next item of business is hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. John?
John McCain. I just wanted to call your attention since the last city commission meeting. We've celebrated an anniversary of sorts on September 29th, just 2 weeks ago, was the 3-year anniversary of the Boyne City noise ordinance being declared vague, overbroad, and unconstitutional by the court. A month or so after Judge May threw out the noise ordinance, the city manager told me that the city was going to save the parts of that the city believed were still valid, and then come up with a new noise ordinance. Well, those were simply empty promises. The city never came up with any replacement noise ordinance. But I was still naive enough to think that something would happen. So I started gathering up noise ordinances from virtually every city in northern Michigan, some downstate, and some elsewhere in the United States. I summarized those and presented those to the city manager in hopes that research might lead to some action, but nothing happened. So after 2 years of no action, I hired a consulting firm to come up with a proposed noise ordinance for this town. That consulting firm is probably the foremost firm in the state of Michigan on community noise issues. And I gave that to the city commissioners and to the city manager at one of the January meetings. So far, we've gone through another 9 months with nothing. You know, that straw man noise ordinance, you know, has objective standards in it to measure noise. And I kind of believe that in the last 9 or 10 months, there's a lot of people in this town, especially the Kirtland management folks, that wish we had some objective standards of which to measure noise. But you know, now we've gone 3 years, nothing. I think the citizens in this town should be asking the question why this city does not want a noise ordinance. It's my opinion that the city administration really is just controlled by the commercial interests in this town, and they have abrogated their responsibility to protect the citizens from harm which can come from excessive noise. You know, it's been 3 years. I'm going to continue to count the days. I just wish somebody in the city administration would get some backbone and do something. You know, every other town virtually in the entire United States has a noise ordinance. Yeah, lots of them aren't any good. But the one that I presented to you folks is very, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Mr. Bowman.
Hi, Jim Bowman, 1119 West Street. The three chambers in our county have started a Leadership Charlevoix County program that's now entering its second year. And one of the assignments for the participants in the class each year has been to attend a public meeting and just come back and talk about it and give your observations about it. And two people came to a city commission meeting here, and their main observation was, this room is not very citizen-friendly. Look at us. You know, if we had three more people, we couldn't fit them in here. We got this nice big room over here. I don't know why we don't use it. It's, you know, it's uncomfortable. If somebody wanted to leave in the middle of the meeting, they'd have to duck down and cross over people's feet. People over there, the light from the projector shining in their eyes. Why don't we just move over there? You never know when people are going to show up for a meeting, and I think we should make our citizens feel welcome if they come to some of these meetings. That's all. I just thought I'd pass on the suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Tim Petrosky. I'm an area manager with Consumers Energy. We have a service center over on East Street. I'm here to briefly share a perspective on a proposal that everybody's going to be voting on November 6th. It's called Proposal 3, otherwise known as 25 by 25. This proposal calls for the state energy providers to provide 25% of the electricity from renewable resources. Now, let me say this, and I'm going to go through it real quickly. Consumers Energy supports renewable energy, but we can't support this proposal, and we're part of a group called the Clean, Affordable, Renewable Energy Coalition called CARE. We can't support it for a number of reasons. However, what I will say, the proponents of this had to get enough signatures to get it on the ballot, and they did so easily. They got over 500,000 signatures to get it on the ballot. If I had been approached with to sign this proposal, I probably would have, because on the surface, it sounds really good. 25% renewables by 2025 with a limit on your rate increases to 1%. Is it appropriate for me to hand out literature or no? Yes? Okay. I'll pass these around if anybody would like a little more in-depth information. I'll briefly go through CARE's concerns with this proposal. Number one, it's an attempt to bypass the legislative process. If this passes, it will be enshrined, energy policy enshrined in the Michigan Constitution. The Constitution is not a place for energy policy, it's for fundamental rights. If it passes, Michigan would be the only state in the country that has such a policy in the Constitution. The second big concern, cost. We're estimating it's going to cost $12 billion to meet this requirement. That's basically 3,100 wind turbines that we need to build around the state. Now, that rate increase limit to 1%, most experts say it's going to be overturned. So who would bear the cost? Ultimately, the ratepayers. That $12 billion does not include cost of transmission lines, other support equipment to get that power out onto the grid. The other problem is, I think most people realize that wind or even solar power, they don't run all the time. They cannot provide energy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You might very likely have to build up backup generation to the wind turbine to ensure that utilities have enough energy to provide to customers. While the wind doesn't blow all the time, the sun doesn't shine all the time, we have found out over our 125-year histories that people do like electricity 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Another big concern with it is, what's it going to do to the landscape? Again, it's estimated 3,100 wind turbines to meet this requirement. The focus is on turbines because at this point, turbines are the least expensive cost to meet the requirement. 3,100 turbines. We have a couple of wind farms right now, one constructed over near Ludington, one going into the Thumb. And what I can tell you is while almost everybody, and I'm one of the people, supports renewable energy, not everybody really supports a wind park coming to their community. It can be fairly difficult to site a wind park. So one of the big concerns, too, is they're going to be overriding of local zoning issues if you have to meet this requirement. And many times wind turbines are in the beauty or in the eye of the beholder. Some people like them, some don't. 3,100 turbines across the state would probably dramatically change the landscape of Michigan, though. Virtually every economic development organization, chamber, newspaper is opposed to Proposition 3. I urge everyone to vote against Proposition 3. It's just not good for the state of Michigan. Thank you.
Tim, I have a question
Yes. For
you. During the MML conference that we just attended, one of the keynote speakers had mentioned that under the way this is written, that you would not be able to buy that alternative energy from another state.
It's required that this generation comes from inside the state. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. It's very prohibitive.
Yes.
Thank you. Mark?
Mark Kowalski, with Coldwell Banker down here in Wednesday. A week ago, I was showing a really nice condominium up off Court Street, Hockridge Hills, and some folks from Harbor Springs came to look at it. And as they drove up Court Street with their little nice car, they asked about, you know, is this always going to be gravel? And I said, I don't know the answer to that. So, I mean, we're doing a lot of work downtown. We're doing, you know, a lot of wonderful work around the city. But any plans for Court Street at all? I don't know if anybody can answer that or if, it, you know, if, I guess I would ask that somehow we get it on the list. Can always sound like Marty Moody.
Our last commission meeting, I believe it was the last commission meeting, we did approve funding for a study of our gravel roads, identifying and prioritizing. Mm-hmm. And that's working on it.
Any help would be appreciated.
Ron.
Ron Crozier, 1151 Crozier Crest, Plain City. There will be a Memorial Day ceremony 11 at 11 a.m. in the morning. And also, we are putting edging around the memorial. Just kind of giving an update and still working on the sod issue. The other issue I brought to the table for the last 2 months, dogs moving in the park, evidently nothing's being done about it. And from what John said, I guess we can complain and whatnot, and the commission won't do anything about it. And why do we even bring things to you guys if you don't make any decisions? We have an ordinance, but nobody wants to pursue it, and why are we even here if you guys don't want to make any decisions and do things about it? Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Tim.
I'm sorry, I forgot to mention this earlier. You know, we're heading into the winter season, and it gets more difficult for fixed income, low-income people to pay their bills. Consumers Energy and other utilities do have help to assistance in paying their bills. And I have a brochure. I'm wondering if it's appropriate if I can leave these brochures.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do we have anyone else that wishes to address the commission tonight? A non-agenda item? We have one item of correspondence tonight. It comes from Colson Associates. It's sent to the mayor and the city of Wayne City. Dear Ron, just a quick note to thank you and the Boyne City community for the support and dedication over the past year that helped make the new Precision Edge Products facility in Boyne City possible. We look forward to being part of the Boyne City community, and I know Precision Edge will continue to strive to be a valued member of this community. I enjoyed meeting with you. Kind regards, Luhan A. Tucker. And I believe he is the CEO of the Colson Associates. And his whole team was here from Chicago for the ribbon cutting and the grand opening of Precision Edge, which happened about a month ago. So they're off to a good start. Do any of the commissioners have additional correspondence they wish to share? Okay. Our next item is City Manager's Report. Mike?
A couple items for you this evening. Good progress is continuing to be made on the Hanna and Park Street construction projects. Almost all the underground work has been completed on both of the projects, and the curbs have been installed. Sidewalk walk is progressing on both projects, and the utilities are being moved underground on Park Street. Paving should take place on both streets by the end of next week. Beginning tomorrow, brick pavers should start to be installed near Water Street on the corner by Ace Hardware and then working its way south. Both projects, with the weather, are probably about a day or two behind their original schedules. Most of the major work on our annual street maintenance program with the cracks sealing around town has been completed, as have been most of the major street repairs. The scheduled crush and shape work on Leroy, Lincoln, Lewis, Beardsley, and Jefferson Streets has been completed, with other work on Brockway, Deer Run Drive, and at the Lincoln and East intersection will be completed shortly. Today, curbs were installed at the Brockway and Royce Streets intersection. We also expect a crew into town to repair the separated pavement that we had take place on Division and Pleasant Streets as part of a maintenance program that was done a couple of years ago. They should be in sometime next week. Actually, they might be in yet this week, but late next week at the latest. All the projections on both of these reports are all weather dependent. So if there's rains and things like that, it might push them back a few days. Since our last City Commission meeting, the City, and that means mainly Barb and Cindy, completed the first phase of this year's state's Economic Vitality Incentive Program, EVIP, dealing with accounting and transparency, and that was done before the October 1st deadline. With the acceptance of this by the state, it guarantees that we'll receive one-third of our reduced state statutory revenue sharing funds. The other two phases are due sometime after the first of the year. The placemaking services opportunity application for the city complex that was approved by the City Commission at our last meeting was submitted to the Michigan Municipal League prior to the deadline. We received some very strong letters of support from some of our neighboring partners. We're waiting to hear if we'll be invited into the next phase of the application and when we'll be able to know one way or the other. If you haven't noticed it, the water levels have been dropping quickly on Lake Charlevoix. That's caused some challenges with our marina operations, with obstacles emerging from under the water that have not been seen before, or at least for a very long time. And it required the closing of the small boat launch for a short while. That has reopened, but the marina is scheduled to close for the season this coming weekend. We received 114 applications for people responding to our police officer advertisement. Those applications are currently being reviewed and whittled down to a number who will be interviewed and considered further. Likewise, we received 23 applications to our assisting planner advertisement. As we've done in the past, we plan on the applications being considered by representatives of the city and Evangeline and Wilson Townships who have service contracts with us. Candidates will be interviewed by the team and a finalist chosen for possible hiring. At our next City Commission, I'd like the Commission to consider a date for our annual Joint Board and Commission meeting. At this point, from what I've heard from various schedules, I'm looking at recommending Tuesday, December 4th at 6 p.m. If there's anybody that has any issues with that date or other old terms that we might want to take a look at, please let me know. If you have any questions on these or other items, please let me know.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Any questions?
The assistant planner position, is that an automatic renewal, or is that up for discussion?
We can have a discussion at some point if the commission would like.
Being a financial matter, I thought it would be automatic unless there was
something rolled in. It generally wouldn't be, but we could put on an agenda for a future city commission meeting before we complete the process.
For the citizen, just to quantify the need and
explain
why we'd need to spend more money or not. I mean, the county made a decision
in
that direction, so I think it would be worthwhile for the citizens to know.
Okay. I'll see if we can put that on our next agenda meeting.
Thank you.
Our next item tonight is reports of officers, boards, and standing committees, and this includes the draft minutes from the many boards that help make our city showpiece that it is. Our EDC, our LDFA, Main Street, Economic Development Corporation, our Planning Commission. The minutes are there. I don't know if anyone has any question in regards to them.
I have one. Okay. With the Main Street. Are we planning on burying the power lines? Did that go through?
On Ray Street it did, yeah.
On Ray Street? Okay.
The alley still with the alley, the water, you had water through and down.
Okay. All right, but from Park Street over?
From
to Lake Street, right?
From the Wright Builders building.
Oh, okay.
The Johnson Oil gas station, that area.
Okay. All right.
Is that $86,000 price? Is that a firm commitment?
I've not had an update recently. It's that ballpark. I don't have the exact price plate number.
That's pretty darn close.
Yeah. Close.
The first section that was originally approved from the river, working its way south on Park Street, was about $120,000. Our first estimate from consumers was $102,000, I believe it was. $103,000. Then that, when we got the final bill from them, that came out at $120,000. The proposal they gave us for the Ray Street project was in about the $80,000 to $86,000 range. I don't have that specific number in front of me as well, too, but the Main Street board did approve going forward with that.
Right. I seen in there where it included the new services for the two buildings, Wright's and also the library's building there. And it's, is that something the consumer would install, too?
What's that?
The new services.
Any work that's being done on the building, there'll be a separate electrical contractor hired for that work.
But that's included in this $86,000?
Well, that's one of the... we intend to pay for that. That's kind of an unclear number because we don't have that quote from the individual contractor. But the board voted to cover that cost for the property owner.
Okay.
The general estimate when we contacted and got prices from the contractor was under $1,000 per switchover. A lot of it's going to depend on exactly what's all involved on it. If you go, and some of the buildings here prepped for this work earlier, other buildings were not. So it'll vary from building to building, but it's going to be less than 1,000 pieces, what we anticipate.
Thank you.
I'm good.
Any other questions on the board minutes? We also have our August 2012 financial statement. Is there any questions there? Vibrant Small City Initiative Fund was transferred to the general fund, and I thought then when it was fully funded we'd be about $1,650,000 somewhere in there, and this is showing $2,035,000, which is about $370,000 more. Is it because it's money that's been budgeted and not spent, or is this...
Our fund balance changed, and that you'll be seeing in your financial statement review coming up under new business. So when everything was actually rolled in at the end of the fiscal year, you'll be able to see where the difference came from. So yes, it did. We do have more.
That was for August, or April 31st.
Correct,
and
April.
And on page 44 or 45, it showed a $1,645 or something like that. But this is quite a bit more. I mean, mm-hmm. I just questioned where that money came from.
The April 30th, 2012 is significantly higher as well. The $1.6 million was prior year.
Oh, okay. So, moving into unfinished business, first item is Kirtland update, and I believe I get the floor to Mr. Tucker. Would you care to address the commission on that date?
Yes, I'm pleased to do that. Kirkland is still working with the Kodiak group, which was contracted shortly after the completion of the RSG study to optimize the airflow system within our facility, which we believe will have an impact on noise. The most recent focus, which occurred on their visit on yesterday, was on the last piece of equipment that was installed. They came in to review the installation, to collect data relative to that installation, to make revisions, to go back with the data that they've collected, with intent to provide any additional recommendations they believe are necessary to optimize the changes they had proposed in their original statement of work several weeks ago. So that's progressing to a level of finality shortly. In addition to that, we have considered recommendations or received requests for quotes from a number of noise expert firms within the area to do some additional evaluation of the sound mitigation at our facility. We have identified one source that is prepared to move ahead. We just recently got authorization from the city to allow for the release of the RSG data, as well as for that firm to contact RSG direct for the purpose of understanding the specificities of the test methodology that was used in the original testing. With that completed, they will return to us with the scope in hand of the task to replicate the results that were completed by the RSG group in July, will quote to us the services and the timing associated with conducting any additional testing, or with not any additional testing, but would go forward with replicating the test data that would show impact differences on the changes that we incorporated over the last 2 months.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have questions for Mr. Tucker?
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. The only comments I've heard so far is that the noise was better. I do believe I'd like to see Kirtland re-evaluated after Kodiak's recommendations are all done.
Okay. One question, Mr. Mayor. Has the stack test got back from the NDEQ?
Tests conducted by the Dorenzo group and then ultimately reviewed and signed off by MDEQ has been completed. We have received notice that they are completed and they are available. However, we at this point in time cannot secure those documents until we pay the $30,000 cost associated with it, and at this point in time the company is unable to pay for the release of that report. As quickly as we're financially able to do so, we will. We were told that the results were in compliance with the permits that were issued originally, but we don't have any of the details behind it until we gain access to that document.
Lauren or Derek, either one of you have questions? That's okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Tupper. Tom, did you, as a representative and part owner of Kirtland, did you have anything you wanted to add to the update?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
My only question is, you're still planning the 3-day, Tuesday through Monday?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
The days may change during the week for 3 days,
but
weekly, at the beginning of the week, we do notify the city manager of our intent, so he, as well as Scott, aware of our plans.
Thank you. Next item of business tonight is the fireworks discussion, and this time, ask our police chief, Jeff Gaither, to address the commission on the citizen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had sent in a letter to Mike King's city manager addressing some of the fireworks issues that we've experienced. We have, this past year, experienced more complaints to our department than we did in the previous year, and we didn't compile statistics from way back, but we doubled our complaints this year, and that was the complaints that we got and responded to. So it's not the site comment type complaints; these were actual calling complaints. I guess, you know, from our perspective, it wasn't it wasn't something terrible. But I understand the concerns of some of the citizens that had to deal with these fireworks issues and in their neighborhoods and, you know, in their houses. And unfortunately, a lot of the fireworks are happening at night when they're disturbing people. So it is a concern, you know, amongst the citizens. I don't know how many people have been disturbed by it, but I know that certainly some of them have. And what I outlined was there were at least three options at this time that we could that I've come up with, and one of them is to leave the ordinance as it is and basically just enforce the periods, the time periods that we have on the city ordinance that's established right now, which is the time period that's prohibited between midnight and 7 a.m. And we can continue to do that if that's what is decided. The second step would be to pass an ordinance similar to what some of the other cities around are doing. Traverse City and some of the townships around Traverse City have just gone through that process, and they've enacted ordinances to basically prohibit all fireworks use within their jurisdiction except for those time periods that are mandated by state law, and that's the holiday and the day on either side of the holiday. So that, you know, that's one of the options here that can be looked at. The third one would be to change the existing fireworks ordinance to reflect whatever hours you felt were appropriate for that, but I think that may be difficult because of the use of nighttime fireworks, and in the summer it doesn't get dark till 10:30, so the fireworks start going then. If we were to prohibit, say, 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock, it's going to be hard to clamp down on that. Those are basically the three options that, you know, that are kind of staring us in the face, and of course there's probably other options out there, but those are ones that I wanted to bring to light tonight.
Thank you. Mike, do you have any comments? I know you sent us an email today with the Record Eagle article.
Yeah, just to show, there's a wide range of options that communities are facing. Kind of the same options that the chief outlined to you as well, too. Some communities are banning it completely to the extent that they can ban it outside when the state allows it. And then there's other communities that are basically not doing anything with it. So you have that whole spectrum of things. One of the things we looked to do was to see, okay, what type of feedback did we get from the citizens and what type of things did we notice ourselves after the 4th of July and then after some of the other holidays over the summer season. We were also looking to see what, if anything, the state was going to do with regards to it. And they set up a committee, but they haven't done anything with it. And as Jeff mentioned in his memo, they may not do anything with it. They're looking at, you know, some financial implications to the state to, you know, allow this to continue. They're looking at some sales tax revenues from it. So basically, if the commission wishes to have the staff do something with this item, we need direction from the commission as to which way to go. And that's kind of where we're at, I think. And we'd be glad, and if there's additional information that the commission is looking for from the staff, we'd be glad to try and provide it, but that's what we have at this point.
Thank you. Do we have any additional input from department heads or fire chief or any staff members? Do we have any citizens who wish to comment on the fireworks?
I guess you're getting tired of hearing me. This is Jim Bauman, 1119 West Street, and I'm speaking as a citizen, not in any capability for the chamber. But, you know, I wrote you before, and I sent you a copy of the police reports that I singled out the ones that were, there were 15 in the month around leading up to July 4th and the few days after. And, you know, we did a survey of our members asking our members and residents what they felt about it, and it was two-thirds of the people thought that we should, you know, we used to have no fireworks at all. Mm-hmm. The new state law says, well, you got to have fireworks 30 days a year. And now we've gone to 365 days a year. I'd like to see you hit that middle point. That's reasonable. You're letting people use fireworks more than they could before. But every night of the year, I mean, it's just all summer, it was very disturbing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were 15 of these complaints in the police. We never called. We were mad. But, you know, why call? Because it's legal. You know, every night of the year, it's legal to use fireworks. And there's not much the cops can do about it. You know, mm-hmm. We call them. They get there a few minutes later. They do want us to call. They told us to call because if they were coming off after midnight, that they could try and do something about it. But it's kind of like the dog situation. You know, once it's been done, it's pretty hard to follow up on. So I just think that middle ground, number two, is a good sort of reasonable compromise. And if it's not happening in your neighborhood, it's probably not a big deal. But a lot of them were in my neighborhood. And I've heard, you know, Commissioner Sansom talk about how she's heard it numerous times, and mm-hmm. I think that's a good compromise. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other citizens who'd like to get in on this fireworks discussion? Okay, if not, we'll go to commissioners. Laura, would you like to start?
Well, yeah. I had a number of incidences last summer where I lived up on Lincoln Street where night after night after night they were going off, and it might have been 20 minutes past the cutoff time or half an hour later. And I didn't call and report any of them, but there were many, many nights, a lot more than just the day before, the day of, or the day after. It went on and on and on throughout the summer. Very disturbing, especially if you have to be to work at 6 in the morning. Very hard to sleep. I like the sort of putting a little more tighter rein on it, not having it 365 days. I would be in favor of, say, whatever the state has issued, which is the 10 holidays, day before, the day of, and the day after, would make 30 days a year. I think if we designate a time frame, it should be not past 11 o'clock at night. That would be my personal, you know, priority, I guess, on that. The other thing I think I'd like to see added into this whole mix, and maybe it goes without saying, but it says fireworks shall not be sold to a minor. It doesn't say anywhere that fireworks cannot be set off by a minor. And I think it should, the implication to me is that if you can't buy them, you have to be 18 in order to buy them. You shouldn't be allowing 9 and 10, 12-year-old kids setting them off in your neighborhood. And I watched that happen last summer with great alarm because they were setting off bottle rockets. And it's a little bit scary when you see young people doing that because they're not allowed to purchase them in the first place, so they shouldn't be allowed to set them off. I think that's one thing that bothers me a great deal. And we might want to just add that in. I don't know why we couldn't add that into an ordinance. The other thing, there was one other thing that bothered me about this. Oh, during high fire season. Maybe we can't mandate that they don't set them off, but we could probably request that the citizens be cautious enough and careful enough that if there was a high fire danger, that we would suggest you do not set them off. And then some other communities have adopted a situation where not only these holidays would be allowed, but if, say, somebody had a family reunion or some special event planned or something else where they wanted to set them off, that they would be requested to get a permit from the city in order to do so. And those permits don't have to be real expensive. They could be, you know, 10, 15 bucks or something, so that you can allow those outside of those holidays on special for special things. So maybe we could allow that, and that might then make it a little more flexible and easier for some people who want to come and do that. So those are some of my suggestions or thoughts on it.
Thank you, Laura. Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was kind of hoping, Chief, do you have those statistics available for this year and maybe the previous 2 years available?
I do.
Okay.
I can give it to you right now if you want.
Sure, yeah. The members like
to, you know, this really isn't
for comparative analysis.
It's comparative, and it's not just a scientific study of anything. But 2011, we received 12 complaints, and in 2012, we received 27 fireworks-related complaints.
For the entire year in 2011?
Yes, that was for the entire calendar year in those years. And I'd reiterate that, like Mr. Sanson said, that there's a lot of people that are hearing fireworks that aren't calling. So
that's
we're
right.
We're not necessarily getting every time, we're not getting a complaint every time the fireworks goes on.
Yeah.
The correspondence that we got from the city manager referenced an article in the Record Eagle. About a couple of the townships were doing the outright ban. What I did find interesting is the largest township in Grand Traverse County, I believe, I don't remember who made the comment, it was the township supervisor or whatever, but that they were going to leave it as is and not do a knee-jerk reaction and just continue to monitor it. Back to the complaints, I was wondering, the other critical factor, I think, is what were the days or the dates of these complaints, and look and see, is it around that 4th, and did they continue through all of July? Were they random through August into September? Have they waned, which I personally believe they have tremendously, but I'd like to see the, if you have the dates on there so we can look and see. Yeah.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I've only got one copy, but I'm glad to share.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you can bring that up, that'd be great.
Make copies for everybody, or?
Yeah, I think. Could you do that?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's for Cindy.
Thanks, Bert.
Want me to come back to you?
Sure. Yeah, we can finish up and continue around.
Gene?
Yeah, I would like to see that too, but being that the department had more complaints about fireworks this year than they have in the past, I believe we should consider option 2.
Well, I was in favor of the 90 days so that we can see what other townships or communities are going to do and see what the state's going to do. And waiting on the state, obviously, was probably not a good choice. But I think option 2, I agree with Gene that option 2 would be a very good compromise, and it makes sense. And it's I would be in favor of option 2 for the staff to proceed with. And as far as a fire ban, I think that's already handled in other ways. It's already handled through the DNR saying that you have fire bans and that you have municipalities saying that you cannot have fires, so I would think that...
Doesn't apply to fireworks, though. As I understand it, does not apply to setting off fireworks. Even if it's a high fire danger, even if you needed a burn permit, or no burning allowed, that you could still set off fireworks even during those times. And I think somehow, as I understood it before when we discussed it, and I went on the internet, did a lot of research on it, there was no way to put that in to that and say that it was banned. And it should be just, I think, common sense that people wouldn't do it. But, you know, maybe it's just an educational kind of thing that we have to...
Okay.
Put out there. But anyway, that was my understanding. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
that
we
staff
can.
Staff could proceed with that.
Yeah. Okay.
Research that.
Could they? Okay.
You know, at our MML conference we had this week, one of the presentations dealt with the fireworks discussion, and I guess the essence of the way I understood what he was. Now, he summarized it as don't expect anything from this lame duck section that's currently in the state legislators. Mm-hmm. And they probably won't deal with it again until the next 4th of July comes around, as far as amending, you know, based on the complaints that they're getting from the different cities, and, you know, throughout the state. So I think it's incumbent upon us to, you know, control our own turf. And I think that we should act on this, get moving on this item number 2 suggestion here, pass an ordinance similar to what other communities do, limiting it to a 30-day window.
Right.
That's a day before each one of the 10 holidays and a day after, which gives you 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, did you have another comment?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to point out that this came from our complaint logs, and some of the information in here may be confidential. There's addresses and names.
Right.
In there.
Okay.
Right.
We'll keep it that way then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question? When they call these in, do they call 911? Because there's no way to call the local police department at, say, if it's 11:30 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. These would have all been I'm sure they were all called into 911. I don't see any.
Doesn't that just kind of overload that 911 system, though?
Not really.
No. Okay. Because I always hesitate to call 911 if it's not a emergency. You know. You could always call the next day, I guess, the local police department and report it, but then there's nothing you can do about it at that point.
Unfortunately, there's a misconception about our 911 system, and our 911 system, to contact a police officer in the evening, that's where you have to call. Whereas some of the downstate areas, you get in trouble for calling 911.
Right.
But here, that's the only way to contact us.
Okay. Thank you.
Derek, would you like to come back to you?
Yeah.
It is interesting that no complaints up until basically June. There was one in March this year, and 3 in August, none in September, and none so far in October. So it appears to be confined to the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tom touched on one of the issues about the fire, personal responsibility. I mean, if there's a burn ban out and you cause a fire, you're responsible for it, regardless of the ignition source. Minors, parental responsibility, that's pretty simple on that one. And permits, special permits for times outside of that. We're back to more regulation and more fees, exactly what we don't need in this economy right now, in my opinion. I find it interesting that when finally some regulations are loosened, that there's some folks that just can't wait to put the strangle back on citizens. And you know, made it a crime from back when I was younger individual up until this year to light those kind of fireworks off. So that was 30 years, you know, where it was a crime, where every state around Michigan that's been legal and the state didn't implode. And, you know, I fully supported the midnight time frame cutoff. If they're lighting them off after midnight, then they get wrote a ticket. It's pretty simple. The time frame here is, looks like it's confined the majority of it to July. And I anticipate that as the newness wears off, like anything of this regard, that those numbers will continue to decrease over time. History shows that to be the case usually. And not discounting the folks that you know, called in, but you know, at this point I can't support any further restriction beyond what the state has allowed us at this time. Thank you.
I didn't speak personally about our neighborhood, but it was ridiculous, and I think if anybody would call in about it, it would be, we might have a different set of facts and figures to look at, you know, as far as reportable incidents. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as bad as the way Laura described it. Mm-hmm. We were sick and tired of it, quite frankly.
Was this during the holiday period when the majority
of it happened? All summer long. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you anticipate if this ordinance is passed that this will fully cease?
I don't think it'll cease, but in time, but it the people that are continued violators of it at least gives our police department you know, some type of leverage to, you know, tell them to cease and desist, and or, you know, the first time you get a ticket, it might double or triple the next time, you know, it's
I would
way to get their attention anyway. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know all the legal of it, and
sure,
everything you pointed out is very factual, and, you know, history does show that things do minimize, but some areas, it's, you know, along the beach and Bay Street, and our area up there, it was ridiculous.
How early into the morning would it continue that you're bothered by it?
Sometimes 2 or 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the holiday period?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So then we have a violation then after midnight.
Oh, yeah.
So
as soon as it gets dark, even. I mean, yeah, it just...
So the city police have the same authority right now that you were discussing.
Yeah, after midnight.
Right.
Like that.
Yes.
That wasn't
so,
the only time, so...
Right.
The problem for me is, and this is where I don't quite get it, is if somebody sets off fireworks at 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning, by the time you're from a deep sleep and you wake up and you think about calling 911 and get someone over there, they've stopped. They set them off for maybe 10 or 15 minutes in a stretch. You're not sure where they came from or whose house they're coming from. It could be 2 blocks over or 2 blocks down, but all you know is it was loud and it boomed and it woke you up. And so how do you then ticket those people if you don't know who they are at that hour of the night? You know, it doesn't seem to work for me.
But
I guess that's where I'm coming from. I don't understand how you get there.
That same exact scenario would exist if we imposed an ordinance saying you can't do it. You know, people were lighting them off prior to the legalization. The chief, just in the 1 year, has proven evidence. And I'm sure the same argument that there were people that heard it that didn't call in, that knew it was illegal with those types of fireworks last year as well. You had, in our prior discussions, had even indicated that last year they were lighting them off in your neighborhood all hours of the night.
Yeah, they were.
So they had zero regard for the law at that point, let alone an ordinance. So I guess my point is, basically what this does is further handcuffs, pardon the pun, law-abiding citizens that, you know, wish to take advantage of that opportunity that is now legal in the state of Michigan. And I have no problem with a time constraint. Obviously, in the summertime, it doesn't get dark until around 10:30, so you got about an hour and a half window to under the current system to enjoy it. After midnight, if they're lighting them off at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the chief and his officers have the same ability to address it as if we put a total ban on it. So if we're talking about, you know, the majority of it for visual aspect, from 10:30 to midnight, we're dealing with an hour and a half at night. So if it's, you know, firecrackers before that, okay, I mean, that they generally don't require darkness to enjoy, if that's your choice to enjoy those. So,
I don't enjoy them at all.
And I fully respect your opinion. I do.
I do.
And we have a small dog that is affected by it, but that's life. I cannot move forward with infringing on further restraining the law-abiding citizens by more regulation.
Okay. Well, we have four of us that have both expressed an opinion that we'd like to see something similar to what other communities have done here, option number two. And we can call for a motion. Somebody, one of the commissioners, can make a motion that we move forward on this and work, have our staff work with the chief and review these other cities that have adopted an ordinance and bring it back to us for further discussion or approval.
I move to that we pass an ordinance similar to what other communities have done, prohibiting the use of fireworks at any time other than the state law mandated periods, the day before a holiday, the holiday, and the day after a holiday, and send it back to the Planning Commission to bring us an ordinance.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Mike?
I don't think this ordinance needs to go through the Planning Commission.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, okay. It's going to be drafted administratively. It's not a zoning issue.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So,
I just under the impression that it had to go back to planning.
No, not all ordinances have to go through that.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
I mean, we can send it through them if you'd like to get their additional input, but that's not necessary. Strictly per our ordinance, we can just amend it directly.
Okay. Then I can withdraw that last statement, or that last section of the statement.
Okay. Roll call.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Town.
Aye.
Gaylord.
No.
Motion carried.
Our next item of business, unfinished business, is the fire siren usage. And Mike, do the summary for us.
Sure. At the Commission's February 14th meeting, it was decided to try over a six-month period not using the fire siren except for the 10:30 p.m. curfew whistle. Monthly severe weather siren test held in conjunction with the cities of East Jordan and Charlevoix in actual weather emergencies. With a few exceptions, this is what we have done. While there have been no accidents from not using the siren for fire calls, the fire and police departments would prefer that it be returned to its previous use pattern as outlined in the attached letter from the fire department. Personally, I have no strong feelings on this matter one way or the other. Unless some strong public feeling against the use of the siren comes forward that we should take into consideration, I would support the request of the previous use being restored. It should be noted that prior to the six-month test period, before we actually adopted trying the six-month period back in February, there seemed to be a mix of feelings throughout the community on whether the siren should be used for fire calls or not. Mm-hmm. Some people felt strongly on both sides of the issue. While new technologies like pagers, radios, cell phone, text messages, etc., mainly render the siren obsolete for summoning firefighters to the hall, I do believe that it does help put the rest of the community on notice that something is going on and that they should pay more attention to their surroundings and for firefighters coming or leaving the fire hall. For those people that do hear it going off while that's taking place, it does help put two and two together when they hear the siren and then they see the firefighter responding in their personal vehicles. So it's my recommendation that the previous usage of the fire siren be restored for the fire department runs. There's other options. The commission could postpone this matter for further consideration or additional public feedback. You can extend the trial period or make it permanent or come up with some other option that's determined by the city commission. As noted in the memo, I included the letter from the fire department that they prepared. Also included is a memo that we used earlier back in February that gave some background on the matter and the commission's minutes from that time. That's all I have at this point, unless there was any questions on what we've had. I should notice, too, I mean, one of the reasons that we really wanted to simplify the use of the fire siren mm-hmm. was for the severe weathers. You make it more apparent for people that, okay, hey, I hear the whistle, and it's telling me something, because it is hard to distinguish between the fire whistle and the weather siren. Hopefully people, you know, take it on their own behalf to get one of those weather radios that can actually tell them something like that so that they have something going off in their homes or in their car or where they work that they need to take care of that. We had hoped that Charlevoix County would help lead working with the different departments and come up with an overall scenario for that. I think we're still waiting for that to take place. It hasn't come forward. If at some point it does come forward in the future, we may want to revisit this issue. But again, we're looking at what tools we have and how we can make mm-hmm. the most good. And right now, that other option of promoting it more for a weather siren really hasn't developed yet.
Thank you. Chief Amesbury, do you wish to address the commission?
Yes, the department feels strongly in restating the fire siren. Mm-hmm. They feel like some of the stuff that Mike reiterated that we feel it's a safety issue too. It's not only nationalize a fire, it lets the people know that we're going out. We have POVs coming into the station and trucks leaving. This year it hasn't been going off, and we haven't had any accidents, but it has been a little, you know, people aren't aware that we're coming out there, that we're right there on top of them. Mm-hmm. And you know, the city is a lot busier in the summer than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times guys are out mowing the lawn or working around or downtown or something, and they hear the siren and they know there is a fire, and it's, we just feel that it's a great asset to us and we'd like to see it reinstated.
Thank you. Do we have any additional staff members or department heads wish to comment? Chief?
Yes, maybe. I'd like to speak in support of it also. I do believe that it alerts people in town that there are fire trucks on the way, as well as Chief Amesbury said, that personally owned responding vehicles. Sometimes people don't recognize those fully as mm-hmm. you know, emergency vehicles, but that siren goes off and people know that something's happening. So, our department's in full support of reinstating the fire siren. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to comment in regards to the? Yes.
Yeah, Chuck, yeah. Firefighter, paramedic here in town. We do have radios, but they're not always functional. In recent history, 911 did go down, and if we had whistle, we would have been able to, you know, been paged out by that. Mm-hmm. There's times that we're not always carrying these radios. They have to be put on a charger at night. In metal buildings, we hear the whistle, and it does expedite our response. And there has been multiple times where we have not had the response recently that we would have with the whistle. So it's we carry the radios 24/7, but they're not always on us. They have to be put on chargers at night. They're not always available to us.
Thank you. Does anyone else want to speak to this issue? John.
I'm not sure I quite get it. You know, apparently in the last 6 months for the test, there were no issues, but Chuck sort of implies that there have been issues. So I don't know which one of these assertions is correct. To me, if we don't need the noise to get the people to the firehouse, and there are cell phones, regular phones, there are other ways to gather up the firefighters, and apparently that's been working. And once they get to the firehouse, when the fire truck goes, the emergency unit goes, they have their own siren. So people in town are aware of what's happening because all the emergency vehicles have sirens. So the whistle to me, it's not necessary, it just seems to me that it's excessive. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that wishes to speak?
Time
we'll go to.
I do.
I didn't see your hand.
That's okay. Chris Christensen, 111 East Pine Street. I think you should reinstate it personally. I have a 3-year-old son, and every time I hear that fire whistle, the first thing I think about is, all right, look for my kid, okay? Because I know that these trucks are going to roll one way or the other, and I know that I got to know where his whereabouts are or whatever it is. And I realize that hasn't been going on in 6 months, and you're right, there hasn't been an issue, but when the trucks come through now, they're already on you. By the time I see a truck on its way to the fire department with the siren going, and we're out walking frequently, that truck's already on me, and it's already barreling down at a higher rate of speed than if I get the warning of the overhead signal that says, okay, listen, these trucks are coming. And I know to, rein my child in so that, and that's a personal example, but I don't, I think that it should be reinstated personally. So, my opinion.
Thank you, Chris. Anyone else? Okay. This time we'll go to the commission for a discussion. Gene, would you like to start?
Sure. I believe we should respect requests from our fire department and our police department. Therefore, I support the recommendation.
Derek?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My prior commentary on this issue was related to the 10:30 siren noise. And at that point, I had made a comment referencing, I thought there's plenty of cell phones out there that we shouldn't need anymore. Well, as I also made a comment, I found out what it was like to be a public servant and was inundated with folks that said, that is a tradition of Boyne City, and we like it, and we rely on it, and it's not a problem, and duly noted. So now we move to the fire thing. I'm just going to back a little bit to what Chuck's comment was. A couple slightly disconcerting statements there that hopefully we're going to be following up on as soon as the meeting is done, and that's the comment that radios are not always functional. I hope that there's an issue with that.
That.
I'm sorry?
Maybe.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. In metal buildings.
Right.
Sometimes you do have a problem. Mm-hmm. It depends on where you're at. That's inherent to any two-way radio.
Right.
You cannot get reception 24/7. So that's what I was getting at.
Okay.
Also,
I thought you were talking about the radios themselves not being functional.
No, our radios are all right. It's reception, you can't always get reception every place you're in.
Okay. Then you referenced the response times were longer without the whistle. Do we have some statistics on that? Because that's a little disconcerting as well.
Some people do not hear the page on their, with the radio.
What is your policy, Chief, on that?
We have a page out, and if you
right.
hear it, you mm-hmm. come.
Okay. Have you noticed a deficiency in your staff?
I have had guys complain about it.
Okay.
Some of the guys that work at the factories and so mm-hmm. forth, they do not hear their pager go off or something
okay.
because of where they're working. And a lot of times if the whistle goes off, they might not hear it, but other
somebody
members
else.
Will tell them that the whistle has gone off.
Okay.
And like Chuck said, sometimes you might run downtown and forget to take your mm-hmm. radio with you, or your pager or something. And, you know, when you hear the whistle, at least you know you responded.
Okay. So would they be required to have the radio when they respond if they were in downtown without it? And the siren went off?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
As long as the
so they wouldn't have to go back to their residence to get
the
it?
Radios, that's the main thing.
Okay. Okay.
Main radios are for is mainly for the paging purposes.
Right, right. Okay, so you're comfortable and confident that the process mm-hmm. of the radios is proper, functional, you're our firefighters are following your policy and directive that has been set forth. And if there are any deficiencies, you would have corrected that.
Yeah. Okay. We have to get new batteries and antennas
oh, sure.
and radios break down occasionally.
That they do.
Yeah.
As long as you're on top of that, that makes me feel better. Okay. I know Mr. McCann commented that, you know, his desire would be not to hear it during the day. And, and I respect that. I also agreed with him prior on the 10:30, but I think I've covered that as well. Common sense is fantastic, and statistics are great, but traditions are very powerful, and then I fully respect those. So, at this point, I'm going to go with the recommendations of the fire chief and the police chief, and. If I get inundated with citizens saying, why is that darn siren lit back up, then you can rest assured I will be requiring to be returned to the agenda. That's all. Thank you.
Laura?
I'm not in favor of unnecessarily creating noise when it's not needed, but I think in this case, based on what you've talked about, I feel that comfortable going back to the system where we do use the siren. I think it's probably helpful, like it's been pointed out, that people, if they're aware of a situation going on in neighborhoods and stuff, that they do get their kids out of the way and they do take notice. And I've heard comments from the public saying, gee, there aren't any fires in a long time around here, you know what I mean? But I think it just raises people's consciousness. And I think if the siren helps save someone's property or their life, it's well worth it. For the little inconvenience of noise that we put up with on that. So, I would be in favor of reinstating it.
Tom? I too am in favor of reinstating.
I'm also in favor of reinstating it, and you know, I think that our fire department's in such close proximity to many events that occur in mm-hmm. Veterans Park and our community playground here. And seems like we've got more and more events, and their parking's at a premium sometimes, like during a farmer's market and, you know, some of the events we're having here, and there's a lot of congestion, and it's, I think it's a good thing to mm-hmm. reinstate it. So someone must make a motion to move forward.
I move for consideration to restore the fire siren to its previous usage.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay, our first item of new business tonight is the audit presentation. Cindy, are you going to do the summary on that, or is Mike doing that?
Actually, I'm going to introduce to you from Anderson Tackman, our auditor, Rebecca Remendini, who's going to give the presentation to you. And you all received a copy of the financial statement on Friday.
Hello. I'd like to thank you all for having us here this year. It was a pleasure working with everybody. I'd like to thank Cindy and the staff for all their help. It's greatly appreciated doing the audit. I'd like to start with a brief explanation of how the audit is conducted. Usually we do it in two parts. Mm-hmm. The first part is test of controls, where we sample different types of transactions like receipts, disbursements, payroll, and journal entries. And we make sure that those are being done according to the policies and procedures that are in place to make sure that everything is being put in properly. And the second thing we do is called year-end. And that is where we validate everything in the financial statements, revenues, expenses, assets, liabilities, and then fund balances. Okay? Mm-hmm. I'd like to go over the graphs next. Everybody should have a small packet with colored graphs in.
Also, it will be available up here.
No, I don't have it.
Are the financials up there?
They can be put up there.
Oh, okay. Well, the first graph I'd like to go over is on the assets of the city, and you can find the numerical information on page 12 of the audit report. And the bulk of the city's assets are the capital assets net of accumulated depreciation, and that's about 73% of net assets. More information regarding the assets can be found on page 33 of the audit report in the footnotes.
Do you want me to look into any of these pages?
You don't have to, but if you want to, you could. It's not necessary. The second largest portion is cash and equivalents, and that's about 17.4 and 2.1% for restricted and unrestricted, respectively. More information on cash can be found in note number 3 of the footnotes, and that starts on page 31 of the audit report. The next graph, if you'd like to move on. Am I going too fast, please?
No, that's fine.
This illustrates the liabilities and assets of the city as of June 30th, and the numerical information can be found on page 12. And the most significant portion of the liabilities is the bonds payable, and that stands at about 27%. The debt of the city can be found on page 37 of the audit report under note number 6 of the footnotes. And the most significant portion of net assets is invested in capital assets, and that's at about 49.5%.
So what would those capital assets be?
Like
roads, water lines, vehicles, or are those someplace else?
We can go to page 33 if you'd like, and that explains... Those are, there is actually, there's the two parts, there's governmental and business type. The governmental portion is on page 33, and that is composed of capital assets that are not depreciated, which is land and then construction and process. And then the other part, which is depreciable assets, is land improvements, infrastructure, business, equipment and furniture and fixtures. And the net of all of those, which means after you take out depreciation, is what's represented in there.
Mm-hmm. I guess when I think about that, you know, the net, after it's, whether it's brick and mortar, when it's been depreciated or fully depreciated, whether it's, you know, how are we insured? I guess that's our liability insurance. That's the key thing we want to be looking at.
Reflect.
Replacement cost rather than what its value is. And then the other thing is you know, assets versus liabilities, you know, being able to summarize that inflow, outflow, and give us a picture as we could be. It could spend all night going over all these notes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult, unless you're a CPA yourself, to really digest it. And I don't mean to discredit anything, you know, the process that you normally are, do to present an audit, but, you know, to possibly simplify it for us people that don't have that kind of background, so that hopefully come away with a good feeling. You've given us an excellent, you know, that report that everything is fairly stated and we are in good financial shape, which all of us have, as commissioners have read, but I think we'll find a way to simplify this in layman's terms.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess the easiest thing for me to do then would be to go over the revenues and expenses, which actually are the next graph, if you'd like to turn to that one. And that basically is a summary of the different types of revenue that the city takes in. The graph after that is your expenditures, and it gives a breakout of the different types. And after you subtract your expenditures from your revenues, that net portion is added to either your net assets or your fund balance, depending on if you're talking about government-wide statements or fund statements.
And when you say fund balance, are you talking about the general fund?
There are several different types of funds, and the general fund is the largest one.
Okay.
And the fund information is actually found on page, I believe it's, um, 14 and 15, and that gives a breakout actually of the different types of funds that you have. The balance sheet is the first one that's shown on page 14. And page 15 is the revenues and expenditures. These are the fund statements here. And if you'd like to, I can go ahead and move on to the independent auditor's report, which is on page one of the audit report. And that is a summarization of what we did. And it basically says that the financials are fairly stated in all material respects, and we express an unqualified opinion, which is the highest and best that we can give.
Very last paragraph there.
Usually we like to go through our letter in the back, which is our communication with those charged with governance, which is you as the board. And that is a summary of the audit and our responsibilities and your responsibilities. Usually we go through the back and discuss if there were any difficulties encountered while performing the audit, and we're pleased to say that we encountered no such difficulties. Everyone's a pleasure to work with here. If you would skip to the back, we have an area that we have identified for room for improvement, and those are what we call our comments and recommendations, and those are on the very last couple pages. Most of them are prior year, which means that we've been over them before. The accounting for financial reporting and intangible assets, fixed asset listing, GASB 54, and
Form Chart. GASB 54, what page was that on, GASB 54?
That was a new GASB pronouncement that required that we separate fund balance into five different types of fund balance. And we actually implemented that into your fund statements. But usually we like to see that there's a policy adopted that you, the board, have approved. That's all that
means. Restricted and unrestricted.
Correct. Yep, right. That's what that means.
Right. And I believe we've done that already.
And then there was the uniform chart of accounts, payroll, and cash. I believe that was everything that we notified. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was anything else that we noted. Were there any questions?
The only thing that was is the work in progress is what we're working on the chart of accounts, just making sure we're falling in with all of the state regulations, and that's just kind of a work in progress for me. So.
And it's because you guys have so many line items that have always been there, it's very hard to change once they're already set. Mm-hmm. Did anybody have any questions?
I got a few.
Sure.
And I know this is complicated, or you can answer this probably six different ways, but what is our what is our fund balance? When you just go general fund balance.
If you go to page 14, okay. That's the governmental funds, you can see where it says total fund balances. If you go all the way to the right, there should be a number that's $3,060,533. Mm-hmm. That is the combination of all of these
and
government
funds. And what percentage
funds.
Of that is that?
It looks like about, you're including that in all of the net assets, 75% looks like. Just from looking at this, I didn't do that calculation, but just from looking at it, that's what it
is. About 75%. Mm-hmm. And what is the recommended minimum, maximum?
We actually don't have any set parameters for that. That's actually judgment on your part as the board. Anything that you guys deem that you probably would like to set aside, if you have anything, any projects in the future, or if you need any special capital outlay that you need to purchase, like a fire truck, for example.
Like a new city facility?
Yeah, something like that. And you
what
set
I'm getting
aside
at,
for.
You know what I'm getting at? How much can we spend and still be fiscally conservative with our fund balance, mm-hmm. but how much do we have that we could spend on facilities? Mm-hmm. You may not have that answer, but that's what
right.
I'm getting at, Cindy.
Yeah.
And obviously still stay fiscally conservative. And responsible.
And unfortunately, we do not give advice in that area. That is where you as the board need to make that decision.
Okay. But I would suspect that $3 million is better than most cities our size.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You guys are doing very, very well.
I'm done.
Any other questions?
Anyone else with a question for?
Just on the findings,
mm-hmm.
the 12-1.
Yep.
Is this a new event occurrence or is this a continuing occurrence on the delinquent tax disbursements?
That prior, wasn't it?
And that would that lead to the county and
yeah,
the state?
Yeah, I had a prior. Yeah, I was roughly 14 to 15 days, and it should be 10.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I'm
yeah.
at 10. I'm consistently at 9 mm-hmm. or 8 or 10 now.
Okay, so we okay. that's
that corrected.
Cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have a question on page 44.
Okay.
And I believe this has to do with unfunded liabilities mm-hmm. for pensioners and people that are currently working for health stipends post-retirement.
Yep.
And our last actuarial date is 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 374,000. But I didn't find anywhere in there where I looked, you know, as far as what we set aside so far, you know, in that fund. Where to find it and what page. I know we, the very first year we started funding that, we put out $100,000, and then I think there was $30,000 the next year, and I believe it was $38,000 in this budget year.
Probably.
But I didn't find the track record of tracking of it.
If you're looking for the net OPEB liability at the end of the year, you're going to find that in the government-wide statements, which are the first set of the financial statements beginning on page 12, and it is about the fourth line up in the column to your very left called governmental activities, and it's $9,388 is your liability at the end of this year.
I think what he's looking for is how much have we put away to pay for those future costs.
Oh, that?
Thank you, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that actually, that is usually done by your actuary, and the actuarials are normally done every 3 years. So we have that information to work with, and we update it every year using the annual required contribution, which is a formula which you can find on page 41.
Page 41.
Mm-hmm, okay. The one right before that, where it says primary government, there's a section called annual OPEB cost. And there's that little calculation there. That annual required contribution is what you guys, according to the actuarial, are supposed to contribute. And anything that you don't contribute gets added to your liability, and that's what that $9,000 is at the end of the year.
So they're saying we're short that amount right now? Based on that liability?
That is what was unfunded at the end of the year, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when the actuarial comes, you'll be able to see the whole thing laid out in terms of individual years,
right.
Usually when it comes. But I'm not sure when.
We'll be getting our updated actuarial sometime. We'll be working on getting that ready to go out, so that'll be coming back sometime in the beginning of the year.
Yeah. And we'll use the same information for that 3-year period until we get a new one.
Okay. You know, I was just thinking about one of the presenters. Gina and I attended the session at the MML conference this last week in regards to understanding financial reports and working with your auditor, and David Wiesel, I guess is the man's name, that was the moderator, and he's a CPA with Plant Moran, and he made a comment that if you're a city, you have less than 200 employees, that's post-retirement, retired employees, employees working, you did not need to use an actuarial, hire an actuarial firm, and that the auditors that you currently employ could provide you with an Excel sheet where you can do your own thing, and simple formulas were involved as far as using it. Do you have such a form that you could make available to us for free?
What he said is correct to a point. What he said about having less than 200 employees, you do not have to have an actuarial performed at that level. You can use something, I believe it's called an alternative.
Yeah, that was the word he used.
Right.
Alternative computing method.
Right.
Process, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
However, our office has no actuarials or actuaries individually, so we could not provide that service for you. But we could probably look into someone who might be able to provide that service for you, but we couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, do you have any right off the top of your head what you paid for an actuarial?
Around $8,000 on here at GRS. That initial one is the second aid. Those subsequent ones are not supposed to be that expensive, and I'm waiting actually for the quote from them to see what it would cost. So we could get that information from you.
And a lot of times it depends on...
Said that they, the follow-up, a typical price was about $3,000 or less for a city.
I have heard that for the follow-up one, yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it depends on the census data and how much they have to update, and then the tables that they need to use and the life expectancy and things like that, how much work actually it takes to produce that information is basically how they charge you.
But getting back to my original question, I never really did find the total amount that we've accrued so far. So,
and you will see that when the actuarial comes.
Unless that's in the unrestricted funds, or the restricted funds.
What's that?
I say that should have been, highlighted or something in our restricted funds. Like I say, I didn't find it.
It's not going to be in your individual fund statements, like on page 15, because those are your governmental funds, and governmental funds are not designed to have long-term debt. That's why you have the government-wide statements, which are the first statements that I took you to.
Okay.
And that's why that $9,000, which matches this footnote here, that's why that's there.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I don't have any
knowledge. Just the mayor would like that number. Whoever can find that number.
Well, I'd just like to know where we are.
Understand.
Yeah, because unfunded liability.
Well, right now we're $9,300 short, according to that.
Yeah. That says April 30th.
Right.
But we've got a new budget, and I think we.
Sure.
Last year we were, it seemed like 2011. We put in our 2012 30,000 for 13. It seemed like it was 38.
Right, about 39,000 or 29,000 is what
we're covering that in the current.
Good.
Mm-hmm. My impression is that number is going to be found somewhere on page 14 in one of the fund balances. Between now and the next meeting, Cindy and I can kind of figure out exactly which of these line items. Assuming my gut reaction, that's probably. We switch to those different categories for assigning fund balance and that type of stuff. And I'm still learning all that type of stuff, too, so I'm not sure if it's restricted or committed or, where it might be. But we'll try and track that down and make sure, because it is there, and we did put that aside to make sure that it is there for future uses as well, too. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so the unrestricted funds, fund balance $2,295,312 is a good hard number for having something to work with for facilities.
Well, no, that number would not be correct. You'd be looking at your unassigned fund balance of $2,175,164. The other two items that make up the $295,312 on page 14 are committed and assigned funds that are already a pledge for something else.
For the future.
Correct.
Unsigned is what we need to look at.
Yeah.
That'd be my understanding.
Right. Okay.
I have one comment, Mr. Mayor. I just don't quite have a handle on all this yet, but I appreciate Cindy and the staff for doing what I think you have deemed a very good job, and I appreciate Sydney and staff that when I have questions and come in, that I always get an answer. So I appreciate the professionalism that we have in our finance department.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I echo that.
And like we do every year after we have the audit presentation, there's a lot of information that's tossed at you in a short period of time, and the intent is not to overwhelm you with information, but we want to make sure that you know that door is open for any of us on staff as you look through these and digest them and look at these charts that were presented to you tonight, that if you have additional questions, ask staff about that. If you want to double check the answers that you're getting from, we can get you in touch with the auditors so you can talk to them directly if you have some questions with regards to it as well, too. Because they're double checking on us to make sure that we're presenting a balanced approach or balanced picture of what's out there. The whole idea is to have cross checks and checks and balances in this whole thing. So I'd encourage, as you look through this, think of a question in the middle of the night, write it down. Prefer not to get a call in the middle of the night if we can wait until tomorrow.
It's easier when you get those questions about 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's what I get on. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Hopefully we can short-circuit the process.
Oh, no, not at all. And I can leave my card with my email and phone number if anybody has questions with Cindy. That way, if you would like to get in touch with me or any of the others, you can.
Okay.
Just to make sure that everybody knows, as I'm bringing this up on the computer off the website, this complete audit presentation is on the city's website. We'll see if we can get digital copies of these documents as well, too, and add them as well so people have, ease of trying to get that information to them so the public has comments or questions that they can get them to you or to us as well.
Long weekend trying to digest this.
Amen.
Question, does the numbers reflect here, does that change on our dashboard at all?
They will ultimately, yes.
Okay.
Yes. A lot of the information they look for is for audited data.
Right. Okay. Also, just a quick comment that kind of ties into Commissioner Nienhammer. Looking at the state revenue and federal revenues, there's no guarantee that those are going to be those numbers as we move forward.
Correct.
Right.
I mean, again, just for general discussion, and we kind of went through some of this in the budget times as well, too.
Right.
And we've been very conservative. We've been swirling money away so that we could take advantage of grant opportunities when they came available, so we made sure we had enough money to match other funds with. We're building up our reserves for future projects, the city facilities, road improvements that the commission wanted to do. We talked about marinas. We've had some large-scale projects that we've talked about various to. And a lot of it was just the economic uncertainty that we've faced since, the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. We didn't, every year the state was, up until recently, they couldn't get their budgetary act together. We didn't know if we're getting any revenue sharing from them with regards to it. So we've been hedging our bets quite a bit lately. Obviously, we've got some of that money to work with. And it looks like hopefully things are improving on the state and federal level. But again, they keep talking about this economic cliff that we might fall off of after the fiscal year if Congress doesn't do various things. And we want to make sure that our citizens are protected, and we can provide the services no matter what happens within reason.
Well, thank you very much.
And I do have one question.
Sure.
I'm gotten down to me yet. Let me see where it is here. And I'm not sure if this is a risky problem or anything that we should address or do anything about, but as the end of the year, it said $134,139 of the city's bank balance was exposed to credit risk because it's uninsured. Is there any way to do something different to make sure that all of our funds are insured?
No, that has to do with the FDIC coverage that every bank has.
Right.
So based on that factor, each bank can only certify a certain dollar amount per.
Right.
So we can't do anything about that. And the only thing I could suggest if you
is spread it over more banks.
You could do that, and that would be a way to do that.
Okay. I wonder if that's something that you would recommend that we do. We have, 4 banks right now? Is that it?
Or
we got more than that? We got 7? Is that a huge risk? I mean, that's not a lot in proportion.
No, basically it's the risk that the banks would go under and you would lose everything that isn't insured by the FDIC.
Right.
And quite frankly, I don't think that's happened since maybe 1929 at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as a possibility.
Okay. I was just curious about that, if there was some better way to make sure that everything is covered.
Right.
I think the commission may recall that when the federal government change, or the FDIC change of regulations a couple years ago, because everything, when the economy was really going helter-skelter, everything was insured for a while. They put in some temporary regulations that did insure it. And when they moved away from that, we did broaden the number of banks we use significantly, the vast majority of it. Both those banks are local and things of that nature, or in our immediate area with regard to it. Obviously, we could look at possibly spreading some of that stuff out and come back with you with some thoughts on that at some point in the future if you'd like.
Okay. That was just something that caught my attention. I wondered if we should be addressing something there that we're not.
Very valid point.
Okay. And thank you to Cindy and the staff and everybody, and it's Michelle, everyone. did an excellent job. I mean, I feel like we're in really good financial state at this point in time. Again, we don't know what the government's going to do or the state of Michigan, but right now it feels really like we're doing well. We don't want to rest on our laurels, though.
Must be correct.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
If you can give them, I need
yes.
Thank you.
And I'll have Sherry email you those so you have electronic copies.
Yeah, if you can get those to Cindy, that'd be great.
Sure.
We can
share them. I'll have her do that. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a safe drive.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item of business is a liquor license transfer. Consideration to approve the transfer of ownership to Class C Resort SDM liquor license issued under NCL 436-115-1531, located at 5 West Main, Unit 1, Boyne City, Michigan, Charlevoix County, from Y&T Properties, LLC, to DML Property Management, LLC, requested and subject to a background check. Hugh, are you handling this?
Yeah, I could start. Well, basically, what's happening, back in June, you approved the liquor license transfer to Y&T Properties, which is owned by Gail Knapp, so that they had the liquor license. Now there's a new owner for Sunset Grill, and that owner is asking for that liquor license to be transferred to them for operation at 5 West Main. The new owner is Don McCall. He lives in Dearborn Heights. He is asking, as I explained in the memo, he has some plans for the future, and the liquor license is kind of covering all his bases as he described it. His tentative plans are to have karaoke one night a week, possibly small acoustical groups as entertainment in the restaurant bar. He may also offer some patio service, and for special events, he's thinking that in the private parking area there that they may have some outdoor activities. Mr. McCall works for Ford Motor Company down in the southeastern part of the state. He's not able to be here, but he is very familiar with northern Michigan. His family's had property at Lakes of the North for more than 25 years. So it would be my recommendation that this be approved, but Gail Neff is here. I'm not sure the status of the liquor license transfer to your company or exactly where that stands, but...
Hi, I'm Gail Neff. I saw you in June when you approved the license. Being as owner of the building, the license came to me. It is in escrow. That has been approved, and now the next step would be to consider the transfer to my tenant. Mr. McCall is going to put the restaurant back in business and move on down the road.
So that would that is basically what I know about the liquor license transfer. I don't know if Chief Peter has anything to add, but that's what's happening.
Mr. Neff's previous visit to us, when this was, asking for the transfer to his company, I thought it was, we'd have full control of it, because we've had two or three unsuccessful operators there, and so it wouldn't be hanging in limbo. Do you have some kind of an agreement with him that, or something in writing that he would have to surrender that back,
We have a provision, yes, Mayor. We Richard Joseph is representing as their attorney, and mine as well. He's actually putting a rescission agreement into the transfer, or actually it's a sale. It's like $1 or $100, whatever. But in event of any default, obviously the license must stay with the building. It cannot be transferred anywhere else in the county. It would be my responsibility to step in and pay the renewal fees to preserve it, looking for a new, in such a case. I hope that doesn't happen, but you're right. It's there's been, I took the building back last year. I had sold the building, so for about 8 or 10 years, it was out of my hands, and it was operated from another owner of the building. We had Nancy Baxter with Pippins mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. She sold it to Rennie's. Rennie's went through bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Samich and Sud purchased or acquired the license out of bankruptcy. They, in turn, sold it to MMJ last October. That didn't work out for a lot of reasons. And then I took the building over and got that license back into escrow, and hopefully now we can move forward with a new mm-hmm. tenant.
Thank you. Yeah, because I was, you know, I guess myself as a former businessman, and I'm sure the commission is also, you know, want to see a successful operator in there, and not a long timeline or a delay to be able to get somebody up and running if there is a, you know, a business that's not sustainable or whatever happens or business failure. And you do have that control. There's seasonality, being able to open your doors and be ready to take care of customers.
The wheels of the Liquor Commission turn very, very slow. We've been 6-8 months just getting the license this far to me, and I'm not even trying to operate. I just wanted an escrow.
Right.
We're hoping by Christmas they can get this over.
But in the case of failure, doesn't this reduce the timeline as far as being able to get a new occupant?
Not necessarily, Mayor. It's frustrating. I am not an expert in any means, but I've had enough experience, you know, over the years that they're an entity into themselves. Talk about regulation.
Thank you. Do we have any department heads or staff members? Mike, do you have your...
Yeah, I have up on the screen part of the paperwork that's in your agenda packet, which was the transfer that we approved previously. And basically the only change that I'm aware of with regards to it is, I mean, they requested at that time outdoor service, they requested at that time entertainment permit. At that time they did not request the dance permit. So the dance permit looks like not only are we looking at transfer, but there's also a request for somewhat of an expansion of the permit as currently provided. I just want to make sure the commission is fully aware with regards to what is being asked of the commission. And those boxes are, if there's a page, about 5 or 6 pages earlier than that I can go to, that shows, this page here.
Yeah, the question marks.
What has been applied for currently. And then you can see the dance permit is checked there.
So in the interim, while this is being transferred, and are they able to operate under your license?
No, Mayor, they're not. There's no liquor, alcohol on site. There's no sales. They're simply trying to keep the doors open with food only. And that may be subject to, with the season, they may close until the license can... this has yet to go to the Liquor Commission pending... tonight's meeting. That would be the next step to forward the complete package through to the Liquor Commission.
Thank you. Any other? Jeff?
Mayor, one of the concerns I have is the expansion of the permit. Mm-hmm. With the noise complaints that we're already receiving from that in the town for music, and such, mm-hmm. that's just a question that I think has to be addressed, what type of music and how they're going to present that. And the other thing was their expansion of operation to maybe on their application somewhere it said patio or sidewalk service or some type of outdoor service. So I would almost feel like they would need to modify the building structure at some point to make a containment, because they can't just be open where people can walk in and out of if they're going to serve out on a patio. So those are a couple of the questions that I had about it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I guess, Mike?
I did notice that also, in addition to the addition of the dance permit, it looks like the Sunday sales is being added as well, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. That wasn't checked on this earlier box here on this page, but it is on the other one. So those are the two expansions that I'm aware of.
Okay, well, the expansion of service on the patio is, do we have regulations that, you know, control this factor? I mean, as far as the city, you know, the serving, or is that...
we wouldn't have issues...
in the liquor control commission.
With regards to the service of the alcohol, that would be under the jurisdiction of the Liquor Control Commission as to what they allow. With regards to how the property is used, that's a zoning issue. With regards to, you know, how much space they have to have dedicated at that facility for parking, whether so that parking could be reused. You may recall it's a previous operator of this facility tried to have it set up a tiki bar. Mm-hmm. I think they got the bar set up just in time to go out of business or something of that nature. Then the bar kind of wandered around town. But I was never quite sure, you know, on that process, because I don't know if they went through for planning commission approval, and Scott could probably talk to you about the zoning requirements.
Well, I asked that question because, you know, we brought to us a request for, you know, serving liquor on the sidewalks. So.
I'm going to have to step out for a second. I keep getting buzzed by home. I want to see what's going on. Excuse me.
So, would that come under the same umbrella as that? You know, sorry.
Well,
serving it outside.
Yeah, I think again, we're talking about either a zoning issue, if we're talking about using public property for it, or a sidewalk, or if, you know, if we're going to the public areas, then, yeah, it would be a zoning issue. But if it's just a matter of it's private property and they want to extend their building structure a little bit farther, there's going to be some zoning issues with that probably, but LCC is going to be the one that's going to control it. How they gain access and how they control the patrons from leaving the establishment.
And so this is a private property issue. It wouldn't be covered by our zoning.
If they wanted to do any kind of expansion of the building or encumber any of that existing parking lot, it would be.
Yeah.
They'd have to vendor their plan.
Yeah, I just want to clarify a couple things, because I was aware of those concerns, and I talked to Mr. McCall on the phone Friday afternoon. I have nothing in writing. I mean, this may be something that we want to get in writing from him. But as far as the music, he just wanted the opportunity to have karaoke. He realizes the small nature of the business, and he can't have anything real loud in there anyway. He described it as an acoustical group, two or three at the most, kind of thing. As far as serving on the porch, I did not specifically ask him that, other than I assume what he was talking about is something like what Cafe Sante has done. On the outside, they have a patio area. They enclose it. That in sometime in the future, as his business grows, that he has the opportunity to do that, and he doesn't have to go back to the Liquor Control Commission and get wrapped up in that again, that he has that option. You know, he'd have to deal with us locally, but as far as the Liquor Control Commission goes. As far as the dancing, I did not know that. I did not ask that question. Other than maybe if there's a, you know, there's a small group in there and there's a little dance floor, somebody's having a party of some sort, would be the only thing that I could think of. He has no specific plans about expanding the patio out at this point in time. I think the outdoor patio, if he was describing it, is if they have an Oktoberfest, say, or a festival of some sort, that there wouldn't be the opportunity for him to do that.
Thank you, Neil. Commissioners, excuse me for monopolizing the question process, but just is there anyone, citizens' comments before we go back to the commission for final deliberation? Jim
Bauman, I'd just like to urge you to support it. You know, it has been a rough time for them over there, and I think they were doing pretty well when they had a liquor license, and and you know, this would stabilize it. As the mayor mentioned, it would give us a, you know, another good restaurant. And you know, they're having a very tough time. They've been having a very tough time since they lost that liquor license. And I'd just like to urge you to go ahead with this, and I think you can. All these other issues can be ironed out as they make requests in the future.
Thank you. Anyone else? Chief?
Mr. Mayor, just wanted to clarify. I don't have a negative opinion of it. Those were just questions that I had.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tom, would you like to have any questions?
I'm in full support. I think Jim stated the way I feel very good, and let's help the business get going. And this is really just a, what's the word I want? This is just a paper process. We're just pushing the paper through the bureaucracy.
Okay.
I'm in support of it. I'm okay with the transfer.
Okay. Excuse me, Derek.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess my only observation, the prior transfer to Mr. Neff had already included the outdoor and entertainment permit on that. So we've already proved that. I didn't hear any objections from either here in the chambers or from citizens or other businesses that were opposed to that at the time. In my opinion, I think the only question is the dance permit and Sunday sales permit. And I guess my first question, Mike, if you can answer, is do we have any other vendors or businesses in the city of Boyne City that have Sunday sales permits active at this time?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So as a community, we've accepted that, and it's to not approve based on that would be further hampering their abilities to compete in the market of Point City, my opinion. So we're down to dance permit. How many venues do you know that have dance permits approved?
I couldn't tell you.
Sportsman, I think, doesn't it?
I don't know if the chief has that information.
They have a dance floor. I don't know if they have a permit, but.
I think it's kind of important to know that. Are we breaking new ground? Are we continuing with what may be allowed somewhere else already on the dance permit section?
I mean, what does dance permit mean? That's the other question. I mean,
right.
I mean, every bar in town has Sunday alcohol, Sunday music, Sunday dancing, Sunday partying.
But it wasn't on, right, it wasn't on the previous
right. But I guess,
there. So
I guess it's
that's why I asked, do we know for sure that, according to Liquor Control Commission, we have other venues with dance permit on there, and if so, and it's not been an issue.
Process of begging forgiveness rather than permission, too.
So. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, this is our only opportunity to discuss these. If we approve it, we're approving it with those conditions. Yeah. Am I not correct? Mm-hmm. So that's not like a zoning issue. We can address at a later date.
Yeah. Well, it seems reasonable to have it, not need it. And,
right. Well, that's the comment that he made was basically he just threw everything against the wall and hopefully it sticks with putting three against the wall. Based on interpretation there.
The way I understood his comment is he just was unsure of the future.
Okay.
He wasn't quite sure how the business was going to develop.
Sure.
And, you know, it's historically been a restaurant.
Right.
You know, he may be thinking in his mind to be successful. He tries to look at the guys on the weekends. He's not sure that. So, you know, he could maybe envision a dance floor somewhere. You know, that type of thing.
Sure.
That's the impression I got. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not outside of community standard, what's already been in place, I guess, on the thing. We may have some citizens that may, at some point, raise some concerns on potential noise issues there. Hopefully, those could be worked out appropriately before any litigation matters. Would come in.
Yeah, well, I don't have any specific information to address your question.
Sure.
I find it hard to believe that 220 and the current operators of those facilities have not had dance permits. I would think that we do have several of them in the community.
Sure.
I would think possibly the BRI and the Sportsmen, places that I've seen have dance floors on them.
Right.
And it seems like I've seen people dancing even at Red Mesa, but I'm trying to remember if that's a correct statement or not.
That may have been a spontaneous
dancing in the aisle.
So if it's going back to your earlier comment with regards to breaking new ground, I don't think it's doing that.
Okay.
Can I tell you how many they are or specifically which ones they are? I can't at this point. We'd have to research that and get back to the commission.
Right. I'm all for giving a business a potential to thrive and enhance our community, and if this does it, then I'm all for it. Go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, gosh, I've been going back and forth in my mind on this one, but occasional small acoustical groups, do you have any sense of what that means? Is it sort of soft tone? Is
well,
it
I think what it means is
rock and roll? Is it
a defined facility, and he realizes that, so he doesn't want to blast out his customers.
Okay.
So
all right.
I mean, it might be a cello and a acoustic guitar.
That would be nice,
whatever.
Okay, all right.
I would just caution that based on somebody's statement of what they're intending to do, isn't a legal obligation as to
right,
what they
right.
may do.
Right, right. Oh, no, I understand.
It's
I
kind of like somebody saying when they're going for a rezoning permit, here's what I'm thinking I'm going to build.
Yeah.
But until you get a site permit, you don't actually know. So he could be saying a soft acoustical, get the permit, and then come in and, you know, heavy-duty rock or something like that. I'm not saying that they would. I just don't want to leave a false impression in your
mind.
The market has changed. This is not what I want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've seen that before.
It's been kind of sad that there's been no success at that location for quite a lot of years. And I would hope maybe this would work for the gentleman. I'm glad to see that the license would stay with the property, even if he doesn't make it. That I think is important. Going forward, though, if, let's say, and I don't want to be a bad case scenario, but let's say he does it for a couple of years and it doesn't work and it does transfer to another individual, then is the next individual, let's say he did do a lot of loud music, is the other individual then guaranteed to get the same permit?
My understanding, the new individual would be applying the same process I went through, the same process that Mr. McCall is going through. All subject to the local recommendation or approval and the Michigan Liquor Commission.
Okay.
Well, we need a motion to approve the attached resolution.
I'll make a motion that the City Commission approve the attached resolution supporting the transfer of the liquor license from Y&T Properties LLC to DML Property Management LLC as requested and subject to background checks.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Our next item of business is insurance for attorney services. Consideration to continue retraining the services of attorney Todd Millar, now associated with Swagger and Gross PC, in matters he's been representing the city on.
Would the commission like me to go through the memo for any background information? Or are you fine with it? I'd be glad to go through it if you'd like to. Oh, I don't want to belabor the point if you don't want.
Beyond what you documented, or including that?
Including that.
Well, I think as a commission, we all know that, to bring a different firm and a different person in with the two different cases that there's that we're working with right now, you'd have to turn the meter on and start all over, bring somebody up to speed, so it's... It might be a very expensive to change, but the man so far has done an excellent job representing us. So.
I think the main thing that we peaked and something out of that memo that I gave you would be the third paragraph. Mm-hmm. We didn't know Todd before a few years ago when he came to us through our insurance company. I think staff and the commission, that, based on my impressions, has been very, very pleased with the services that he provides. For a lawyer, he talks in intelligible segments, generally, and get you an answer. So I think the efficient, knowledgeable, prompt, effective, and reasonable, and easy to communicate with are the characteristics I picked up from him. It isn't required that we stay with his firm or with him. This is all work that our city attorney could do if he wanted to. But again, one of the reasons the commission chose to stay with him early on was they were pleased with his performance and not to change horses in that street. So my recommendation to the commission, based on what I've gotten from the city commission and working with him in the past, and based on my own personal experiences, would be to retain his services.
Now, normally we ask for department heads' input and staff input, but this has been pretty much a commission process. And I don't know if we have any other staff members involved in this process other than,
I guess. I just work a lot with Todd, and I just echo what Mike said. He's been excellent to work with and very prompt and efficient. Fully supportive.
Cindy, did you have any comments?
I agree.
Tom? Yeah.
I'm in agreement. It's to our benefit to have more than one. It doesn't cost us anymore because it's billable hours from firm A or billable hours from firm B, but we can use the strengths of either firm.
As long as the city is happy or satisfied with Mr. Millar's services, his rates are going to be the same or lower. That's cool.
In both of the cases he represents us, though, we are indemnified through our insurance policy, our liability policy, and a $1,000 deductible. So it's been a long, hard struggle dealing with the two cases that he's working for us, on for us. So, Derek?
I guess my main comment would be, he's leaving firms. I think this is the perfect opportunity to discuss his remuneration fees that he charges us and take the opportunity to renegotiate to the better rate.
Doesn't our insurance provider, they're the one that provided the attorney for us. I mean, is that in our hands to do it?
Yes, for the services that we retained, and at this point we're retaining him for services beyond what he was originally provided for from the insurance company.
Right.
So we're paying for the vet. That's right. Now, on some of these cases, it kind of goes in and out where it's under coverage or not, depending on where we are with the claim. But currently, these are items that we're paying for. So yes, we would have that ability, and it's our relationship.
I thought they were all. You know, it was.
On those two situations.
Yeah, I thought both those two situations were totally indemnified with, you know, the deductible because the insurance company chose them originally, you know, to represent us.
Okay. Yeah, I was under the impression we're discussing this for future issues if we need them. For future issues as well.
Future issues involving those two parties as well.
Right.
For you tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I should say for ongoing and
ongoing,
future.
Right, ongoing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did he bring any or make any reference to moving to this firm, what additional resources he may have versus his prior firm?
No, he has not. I think it's a smaller firm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I went on their website and looked at that. I'm not sure of all the reasons for the transfer. I think they're guarded or probably restricted as what they can say about each other. Everything I've seen from both firms looks like it's been a very amicable separation. What I've seen and heard from both firms, I think he just felt it was time for a change from himself. With regards to the fees, I've brought that issue to him a couple times, and I kind of keep prodding him with regards to, might like to see some change on that. It might be an opportunity for a reduction.
It's a buyer's market. Definitely is. Mm-hmm. And
I heard there's a surplus of attorneys these days. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have a good one too.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm not questioning his work product. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you know, he made a move, and it was with that was the financial relationship with him directly as an attorney at that firm, or with that firm, and he was appointed through that firm. I guess that's the other aspect.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, was the financial relationship with him directly, or with the firm, and then the firm assigned him to these cases?
I'm not sure exactly how that relationship
does it matter. If he left, and if it was assigned to the firm, did they get to retain that service?
We have paperwork from Smith Hoagie asking us whether we want to stay with them or transfer the files to Mr. Millar. So it isn't their work to maintain.
Okay.
And basically our decision as to whether we want the work to
follow
him or stay there.
Stay there or go someplace else.
Okay, sure.
I would assume. The only thing that I would add to that is with regards to insurance issues is that talking to our insurance carrier, Municipal Underwriters, they're going to stay with Mr. Millar as he's made the
Yes, I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's all I have. Thank you.
Nora?
I feel I'm in full support of retaining Todd Millar from your recommendation.
I'm also on full support. Call for a motion.
I move that the City Commission approve continuing to retain the services of Attorney Todd Millar, now associated with Wilbur Bruce PC, for the matters he has been representing the city on, and authorize the city manager and or city treasurer to submit the necessary documents and order to do so.
A second.
Roll call.
Town?
Aye.
Gaynor?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Meathammer?
Aye.
Sanson?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Next item of business is consideration to establish a courtesy car program for short-term airport visitors. Mike, will you handle the summary for us?
Yeah, for several years, the airport board has been looking into the possibility of providing a courtesy car to visitors when they fly in to the airport for short-term use in and around the city. This is a service that's offered at most local airports, and in talking to other airport managers about this service, they report that it's very popular, encourages people to visit their sites, and from what I hear from them, pretty much trouble-free. Several years ago, when a free car was offered to the city for our use at the airport, our insurance company at the time said they could not provide us coverage for it, so the idea was dropped. Recently, I asked our current insurance agent, Paul Olson, about this possibility, and he said they would cover us at no additional cost if we used an existing vehicle. If we got another vehicle for this, it would basically be the same cost, just you'd have to insure another vehicle. With that information, this matter was discussed at the airport board's September meeting, and they unanimously approved a motion recommending that the city commission consider this matter and approve the practice. As considered by the airport board, an airport vehicle would be available at the airport. The driver would need to present their driver's license and local contact information prior to being given a key. It would be allowed to use it in the general area of Boyne City, would be asked to provide a time out and an expected time back, which would be subject to recall if for some reason we needed it elsewhere or by others. They would be asked to replace any gas that they used. If this practice was approved, we would start out probably using an existing vehicle, probably the Marina vehicle commonly known as Blue Thunder, which we acquired under a state surplus a couple of years ago for about $1,200. If an acceptable vehicle was proposed to be donated to the city, that matter could be brought back before the city commission for consideration. The airport board sees this as another way to encourage people to visit Boyne City and possibly turn a stop to get fuel into a visit and possible sale at some of our local merchants. Currently, people flying into the airport have the options of leaving a car there, having family or friends pick them up, using the Charlevoix County Transit or area cab services when those are available, renting a car, or walking. The airport board is also looking at the possibility of obtaining bicycles that could be used. As with any service we provide, there is a possibility of additional cost or liability. As currently proposed, and based on the experiences from other communities, however, though, these exposures appear to be minimal. The recommendation is that the City Commission authorize the establishment of a courtesy car program as it's outlined above. And then there's the options of postponing the matter for further consideration, deny the request, or other options that the Commission may consider.
Thank you, Mike. Michelle.
I think it's fabulous that your insurance carrier will allow this now. We're the ones who offered the pre-car a decade ago. Everywhere we go on business, we borrow the courtesy car at the airport that we fly into. And it's a tremendous business development tool. Whenever we go, you know, borrow the car, we always have lunch or do something in the town where we're doing business. And they're typically junkers. They're nothing special. And it's an honor system. You put a couple dollars of gas in. When there's an FBO, you'll check it out with the person at the airport. Otherwise, there's like lock boxes and the secret codes and the pilot manual. You go and just get the key and put it back. It's all an honor system, and it works out just great. But the thought here is that this would be a great business development tool for us. You know, these pilots come in to get our gas anyway. Let them come and have lunch and get to love our town. Perhaps they'll bring their business here, or just visitors coming in again. Maybe seeking to retire here or just to see all that we have to offer. But I know Rod's done some research on other airports and how they go about doing it, but it's, to me, just a no-brainer for business development and for ease of access for people that are coming into our airport. And we've used it everywhere in our business for many, many years. It just makes it really easy. You go in, borrow the car for an hour, bring it back, and you've done your business and you carry on. So I think it'd be a nice enhancement for us.
Thank you.
Just to reiterate what you said, yeah, it's pretty much an honor system wherever you go. And as far as safety and things like that, usually if you're licensed to fly an airplane, usually you can rent a car. So it's not, you know, but I don't think we're really a concern in that respect.
Thank you.
Well, yes, I was just talking, in fact, today when I came back up through from downstate, I stopped by Claire and was talking to the airport manager there, and they use theirs. This is one airport where they have very, very good statistics. This guy keeps track of everything. And they use, over the last 5 years, the car gets used between 150 to 200 times a year for all sorts of different purposes. And they keep a survey. They actually keep, one of the things we do this, I think we should have a, as part of the sign-off, we suggest we do a survey where they fill out the survey of where they went, how much they spent, and things like that, so you get an idea, so you can quantify, you know, what the value is of doing this sort of thing, which they've done.
Maybe we could build a database and follow up with them on how their going experience was. Is there anything else we could do to help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd bring another new IMI to town.
Exactly.
Or something like that. Mm-hmm. people fall in love with our city. Do we have any staff members that wish to comment?
Way back in the years that I worked at the Chamber of Commerce, we would occasionally get phone calls from pilots that were coming into town trying to figure out how they were going to get from point A to point B. And I can tell you that I would go in my personal vehicle and pick them up at the Boyne Motel and take them and their mm-hmm. luggage back up to the airport or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Since we discovered that we were covered with loaning out the vehicles, mm-hmm. on occasion, at the marina, we have loaned out Blue Thunder for people to go to the laundromat or go to the grocery store when they've come in by boat and have no other alternative. I mean, we have bikes. They do use those, but if they're getting a lot of groceries or they've got a lot of laundry, they've taken the vehicle, and it's been very well welcomed and successful. And we've done it on the same thing. They come in, we make a copy of their driver's license. They tell us what time they need it, how long they're going to be gone. And generally, like I said, it's just quick trips to the grocery store or the laundromat. We have taken boaters on our personal time and our personal vehicles. Beyond that, we've taken them to Boyne Mountain. We've taken them to E9 Opals mm-hmm. Golf Course, to the restaurant out mm-hmm. on Boyne City Road. So once people are here, if they don't come by vehicle, they do mm-hmm. like to go to other places.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Don.
Even if we did get an additional vehicle to add to the fleet donated or something that you accepted, the additional $600 or $700 a year to insure the additional car is pretty minimal when you consider the outcome that we could get back.
Do we have any department heads, additional department heads wish to comment on it? Chief, do you have any thoughts on it?
I don't see any negative effects for it.
Any citizens' comments?
Jim? No, I love Blue Thunder, great name. I think they market that like crazy. Do they have any great names like that at other airports? Great idea.
Thank you. I would move to Commissioner Town.
I'm in full support.
Gene?
I'm in support.
Derek?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Where do I begin? At first glance, seems like an extremely simple request, obviously. One of my questions starts out with, so the first one on the deck gets the car, right?
There are some airports that do take reservations.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually an FBO, generally.
Yeah, okay. Usually it's a first come, first serve.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to direct this to Jim Bowman as the chamber director. Have any of the members of the chamber looked at advertising shuttles to their places of business at the airport, come have lunch at our restaurant or shop at our store?
I've not heard of any.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting. Because, like was pointed out, the folks flying or stop over for fuel or whatever, mm-hmm. Maybe it's mealtime and so, yeah, I'd like to go to the thing. I'm just surprised if there isn't any commentary or prior commentary about somebody having a shuttle pickup. I'm sure you've experienced that as well, other than rental cars and airports you've flown into. Usually, for businesses, pick up a shuttle to this restaurant, or we'll...
Where I've had experience, that's usually been the lodge where they'll pick you up, overnighting someplace.
Right.
They'll pick you up, and usually they'll drop you off the next morning.
Okay.
That's usually where we see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obviously, you mentioned the honor system. My father's a pilot, and I know exactly what you're talking about, the code in the book, and been there, done that. So, and obviously, I would suspect that a little higher standard of operation and care for the next fellow pilot that uses the vehicle. As far as any costs, vehicle repair, vehicle maintenance, any new vehicle with additional insurance costs, I think, and maybe the airport board already addressed this, this would be a perfect example of where to use the funds that were raised during the drag races that kick back, so that would be a direct benefit to them and the pilots without requiring any additional general fund money. Have you heard any commentary on that?
No, other than the airport board does realize there is potential for some additional costs that
sure.
they might have to come up with.
Okay.
They haven't received a contribution from the general fund, I want to say, in probably about in excess of 5 years because of the monies that they have raised
sure.
through gas sales and through the drag race okay. itself.
So they would be able to fully support and maintain that vehicle operation through repairs, replacement, additional insurance costs?
I can't predict into the future.
All right, let me
what's going to happen.
Let me rephrase my question. I think it would be appropriate that they do.
Okay.
Till more of a statement there.
Okay.
If I'm clear on that, so.
And I think that would be their
yeah.
intent.
Okay.
But depending on how their budget goes, how fuel sales go in the future and things of that nature, I just can't promise what's going to happen.
Chief, how much money did the airport get out the last drag race? Do you have a ballpark?
Ballpark, $5,500. That was we
sure,
split
I'm
that point. Each.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
About $5,500.
I think there's plenty of money to cover any additional expenses mm-hmm. for it. So, based on that, that was my only concern. I'm in support. Thank you,
Laura.
Just a couple of questions. What's your anticipation usage rate of this vehicle? Like a couple hundred a year?
I can't give you a number. It'll obviously be used probably more in the
summer than in the winter,
spring,
obviously.
Summer, yeah.
So maybe a couple of times during a day in the summer, and the peak
probably,
of the summer
yeah,
during.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. I'm just curious. I don't have any real concept how many flights go in and out and how many people might be in need.
No, it's, it's in the week, it's usually. During the day, if there's a courtesy car there,
mm-hmm.
people fly in
it will
and they
get
use
used.
It.
Okay.
It is, that mm-hmm. that is a draw.
Uh-huh.
Right. Is it 5,500 flights a year at our airport?
I was just wondering how many a year, how what would be the anticipated.
Yeah.
That's quite a few. Yeah, that's more than I would have thought. So, okay. I guess, and another question, not meaning to say that I'm opposed to this, but I think it's a really good idea. I think we really need something as a way to connect that airport with the community more than it has been. But they're only required to present their driver's license. Are they not required to present their insurance, car insurance as well? I mean, if they had an accident with the vehicle, would that not be under their insurance and not under the city?
It would be under the city's insurance.
Yeah. It would be if they had an accident. I would think it would be under their own personal one if they're the driver.
If we have a rental car agreement, then that...
Yeah,
that
okay. All right. I guess that was...
Or we required that they purchase it. That's an additional regulation and fee, then.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm just curious, because I figured if you had your own personal
sure.
insurance, that it would come under that if you had the accident, even if it was a loaner. But I wasn't clear. The other question I had is, in all these other airports, do they just pay for the reimbursement of gas, or do you find that people also put a donation toward the maintenance?
It goes, yeah, usually there's a donation.
Okay,
there. No,
that's...
Usually go to an airport. We,
yeah,
you know,
that's what I figured.
On,
okay. All right. Okay, yeah, that's... I would if I were
yeah.
using it, that would be most people would. The idea of adding some bicycles up there, say if the car is out and somebody really wants to... go downtown, it's not that far, and maybe a couple of bicycles would be a really good idea to add in as well, so mm-hmm. I support that. It's not too, well, it's not really that bad. No, they can walk it up. As long as it's not raining, it's a nice pleasant day, it probably won't be a big deal. So, okay, now I'm in favor of at least giving a good fair trial and run and see how where it goes and Yeah, you're not going to know until you do it, probably, so.
Thank you, Laura.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only question I have is summertime, we're going to need a second vehicle.
Well, that's what I was saying, maybe add some bicycles to make sure that,
what,
you know,
it says
at
go
least.
Blue or...
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that, Mike. I'm in support of that.
Well, I think we start out with one and try it and see how it goes. We can always add in, or maybe we can get a donation of another vehicle.
But
so
you were talking about using the same vehicle that's at the marina, though, right? Of course, if they call in for reservation, you move it up there, I guess. It's
that's our plan for starting.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Again, just as was mentioned, this is going to be a learning process, and we're going to probably evolve it and gather information on how it's used, and mm-hmm. There may be issues that come up as we go along.
I'm in full support.
I'd like to give another example. I kind of forgot about it, but a while back, the call came in to mm-hmm. me because the marina does have this extra vehicle, but it was from a pilot, mm-hmm. and they wanted to come into town to go ziplining.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met them at the airport, gave them the keys. They went ziplining. They called me and said, do you need the vehicle back right away? We'd like to go to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had it for a couple hours. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they came into town.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sure it was a stopover, but
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So it benefits all the
way
around.
And we left them the vehicle with a half a tank of gas, and it was a complete full tank when we got back.
Yeah. That's what I mentioned, that people be more apt to donate above and beyond what was required
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Yeah, and they just called us when they were done. We went back up to the airport, mm-hmm. met up, and brought the vehicle back.
Yeah.
Okay.
One other thing, just think what we could do with signage on mm-hmm. the side of the vehicle.
Right.
just one city, a friendly community, courtesy car, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like
that
idea.
Yeah.
It does need paint.
Well, you can get the magnetic stick-on signs, you know, and just put a magnetized sign on it and switch it from airport to marina whenever you want. Marina courtesy car and then airport courtesy car, and you can have, switch the signs out easily. Okay.
Okay, I'll call for a motion.
Can I just make one more comment? It'll go back to Jim in the chamber. Maybe that's something you could bring up at next business after hours or next whatever meeting and present to your members and say, this need is out there. It's being, you know, we talk about a courtesy car, but maybe there's a business opportunity for some advertisement that if the car is gone and they still want to go eat, you know, again, each business would have to make that determination, but throw the information out there that this discussion has been out there.
Well, I'd like to inquire because,
sure.
like Rob said, it's probably more common to do that with lodging. And as far as I know, they might be able to call the Boyne City Motel and maybe
right.
that's all set up, but I just don't know about it. But
yeah.
I just,
sure.
I'm just not aware of it. Yeah, good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can get our car dealership to do something.
Well, they do.
They do have car
they
rentals
rent
there.
Cars.
They
I
do.
Know.
So
yeah.
Yes, that's the.
If they want to go further than. You know,
it would be nice. That would maybe be a way to sort of get people into driving a new, vehicle.
Know.
You know, hybrid, and
is
try
that
it out.
Then we're talking about in the general Boyne City area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then
somebody flew in and had to make an emergency run to a hospital in Petoskey
yeah,
or Traverse
right.
City or something like that. I guess we play those on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
It's not supposed, the idea isn't supposed to, they're not going to ride it to Detroit or something like
trip
that.
Trip up to Mackinac Island or
they might.
Hey, while we're here.
I don't know why they'd want to go there after stopping here.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. Let's call for a motion.
I'll move that the City Commission authorize the establishment of a courtesy car program as outlined above.
Second.
Roll call.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Next item on the agenda tonight is purchase of a refurbished auto pulse cardiac compression unit. Consideration of purchase of refurbished auto pulse unit to perform cardiac compressions in the amount of $1,900 from the Charlevoix Fire Department and authorize city manager to execute the documents. John, I believe that's...
Thank you, Mayor. As you see in the memo, there became an opportunity to purchase this unit. For some of you, I had a chance before the meeting started to show you what it looks like, but in effect, it will perform cardiac compressions, and under recent studies shows that it actually improves cerebral vascular and organ perfusion better than manual. The unit itself came available to us shortly after we had an event in which we had a 53-year-old where we had performed CPR for a long period of time, and we actually got the individual back as far as his heart rate. The problem is that even after they cooled him and then tried to rewarm him to see if he had EEG activity, he didn't, and we didn't save him. And part of the frustration is if you take American Heart Association course, they literally want you to do CPR hard and fast at a rate of 100, which takes 80 pounds of pressure to compress the chest 2 inches, and they recommend rotating rescuers every 2 minutes. And if you stop and think of the rescue squad and the EMS squad all there trying to move somebody through, and we were out probably on that scene greater than 20 minutes on the scene, greater than 20 minutes in transport, to get an effective delivery of cardiac compressions in a moving ambulance is a trick just in of itself. So we had some funds come available to a tragic event. I'd like to be able to communicate back to that family that we have taken those funds and have used this to help in the event something like this should happen again. Plus, the staff have been doing CPR courses and trying to raise money for the purchase of equipment. And so I'd like to ask your permission, or I'd like to move forward with the acquisition of this unit.
Thank you, John. Do we have any additional comment from staff or department heads? Barb?
I want him to have that in case I ever need it.
Listen, I'm getting older.
Yeah, we all are. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Dennis, did you have a comment?
I think it'd be a good thing for the ambulance to have.
Okay, we'll move to commission. Gene?
I'm full support of this. We're talking about a piece of life-saving equipment here, so. Yeah, that was good.
Gary?
Thank you. Just a couple questions and a comment. Do you know what kind of, is this got a warranty? It's refurbished, but does it offer a warranty of that it's going to work, and if so, how long? 90 days, you said? Okay. How often does it need to be re-evaled or recertified or make sure it's within spec?
That I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good question.
But I try to get them every now and then.
No,
being facetious, but
no, I understand. But we use Biomed at Northern Michigan or at McLaren Hospital.
Right. And
I'll find out. To me, you know, you have to buy a battery every now and then. But
okay.
And the actual compression chest you replace after use, so that's a brand new compression chest, a compression apparatus.
Right. But, so you'd be budgeting for the maintenance and moving forward on something like that. Then training, obviously, all your staff will get the required training on the device we do. Okay. Lastly, just a comment, I'd like to publicly thank Bob Roloff of the Charlevoix Fire Department EMS for this generous offer. He acquired three of them and has passed that savings of almost $8,000, or a little over $8,000, to the citizens of Boynton City. And so, again, I publicly thank you for that, and I'm in full support of the purchase.
Thank you. Laura?
I guess you asked the questions from tail end coming in, so I feel like I am in full support of anything that will do to help save lives, and especially for the cost that it is. I think it's really important to get it. Probably help on reducing the number of people aboard an ambulance or having to do that chest compression process.
Yeah, it would take fewer, but yes, it gives us an ability to have an extra set of hands.
Right, right, for, yeah, for other things. So, I, no, I'm in full support. I think that
it's amazing
that will be. Yeah, I was watching it when I came in tonight earlier, and, yeah, I was pretty impressed with that. So, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm in full support.
I'm also in full support. Call for a motion.
I'll make a motion to consider the purchase of a refurbished autopulse unit performing cardiac compressions in the amount of $1,900 from the Charlevoix Fire Department and authorize city manager to execute the documents.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Next item on the agenda is our Michigan Municipal League Convention follow-up, reviewing further discussion of topics and items learned at MML conference, and it's got quite a few items myself. A couple of them we talked about tonight already. Mike, would you like to leave the discussion for us?
I kind of picked up the hearing from some of the commissioners at the convention that they thought it might be helpful for us to spend some time either tonight or in a separate meeting, maybe in a work session, to just kind of talk about some of the things we learned on that and see how those things might be applicable here at Point City. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's good. One, I just got to commend the city commission and everybody for taking the time out of your schedules to attend it. This is the first time in my tenure here where we had all the city commissioners attend one of these sessions. It was helpful that it was close by, things of that nature, but I appreciate all of you taking the time to do it and hope you found it useful. Things that were good about the conference, there were things that were not so good about it that they could do better, and hope you use that in your evaluations as well too. But if there's things that we picked up on, and we all went to different sessions from the financial, reviewing the financial statements of hopefully it was some help with the folks here today things that will help us with replacing or upgrading the facilities as well, too. So if you want to flesh those out either tonight or at a work session, it's up to the commission's determination. But I wanted to at least open the discussion tonight and see if that's something you might follow up on.
I think it would be good. Personally, I think it would be good to have another, to have a work session.
Mm-hmm.
We're going on 3 hours right now at this particular meeting, and I know the material I've got, I could probably keep things going at least another half hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing my notes.
Right.
Just because we get into discussions about how it applies to us. And, I don't know. But if it's the commission's wish to go further tonight, as far as notes and comments, it's fine, but I'm personally in favor of the work session. Prepare notes.
I think a work session would be really good and valuable to myself anyway, because I wasn't able to attend all of the different ones, and we all went different directions and had different takes on things and impressions of things that we might want to share with each other and talk about and maybe develop into something that would be useful or helpful for all of us. So I'd be in favor of a work session at this point. It's a big conference. I've thought about it a lot, probably about every other minute of every day ever since. Just ideas and things floating around and things that were said and going, oh yeah, I gotta remember that, jot that down, and think about that, and look that up on the internet, and those kinds of things. So,
did you find some of the presenters' presentations are already on the MML site?
I didn't go on the MML site. I just went and looked up the walk score kind of thing in the communities and kind of investigated into that and what's available on the internet on that level. And I went back and looked up the Arts Alliances. The one seminar that I went to and attended on the arts and cultural events and that kind of thing, and tried to get the information on the internet there, and there's tons of it, so I want to sort through it, maybe put some stuff out and bring it to the work session from those, and need to go into the MML and maybe pull up all the information again that was on the screens for us that we had presented. So.
Yeah, I just got one comment. Linda and I both attended Mike's session, mm-hmm. and Linda and I both agreed that you did a great job in promoting Boyne City. And
I didn't get to that session. I missed it.
So. You know, we all took different venues because there was, you know, in service seminars where maybe you had a choice of three or four each day. We tried to split them up, so mm-hmm. we wanted a different experience. But Mike might corroborate what I was said earlier, that all that I thought in the closing there that they said that all these presentations
yes.
would be available, a link on MML or mm-hmm. I don't know if it'd be a YouTube type presentation.
I didn't see them filming all the sessions. Most of them they didn't. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times they provide like the slides and they did a PowerPoint presentation and things of mm-hmm. that nature. Now like on my presentation that I presented, I didn't see them recording it, and they haven't even asked me for my PowerPoints. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but I know they will make a lot of the information available.
Mm-hmm. It seemed to me that they said that they'd all be available.
That's what I understood too, but then...
We have said it, but I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see.
Well, it's like that registration form. There were surprises on that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tom? Mr. Mayor, I'd be in favor of a work session, and I think what we need to talk about, well, in education, too many times people go to conferences and they come back and they don't share what they learned. So here's a perfect example where if we take our goals, mm-hmm. take our department heads, and take the commission, and then the new ideas and any new ideas, but the things that we learn at conferences and have work sessions and say, okay, we're going to try these strategies mm-hmm. to attain these goals using these people. You know, I think those are some good concepts that we can pursue, not tonight, but through a mm-hmm. some type of further discussion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Laura and I talked about it because we rode together, and mm-hmm. Mike and I talked about it because we rode together, so I just think there's a potential for creativity bringing people together
yeah.
with new ideas.
Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, can you set something up for us?
Well, I put up the calendar here in case anybody knows. The hardest part of any meeting is scheduling the date. And usually what I try and do is start out with Tuesdays, and we have next Tuesday that's available and also the 30th that are clear on this calendar at least. I don't know what about your personal calendars and what you folks have set up yourselves, if either of those dates are good. And then we should also maybe talk briefly about the format. I mean, each of us went to a number of sessions, and I don't think we want to repeat every session that's in here. And I don't know if we start with, we have people, you know, bring to Cindy or myself what topics they want to talk about, or do we say, okay, let's go around the table and, you know, Tom starts, or, you know, one of the commissioners starts and said, okay, here are the sessions that I thought I got something out of that I want to talk about further, and then probes that a little bit. And if there's a way to think about that and somehow... Maybe have some real broad outlines so that put out an agenda and say, okay, here's some of the items. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to format it in a way that's most productive.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe each of us send an email to you and Cindy, or CC it to both of you, and not the commissioners, but
you. Saying here's some of the topics we want to talk about.
That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, that wouldn't exclusively limit it to that conversation, but okay, those are the points maybe you want to start from. And if something else comes from that, go from there.
Here's what I'd like to share.
And along that thought process, so it's still, like I would like to involve Hugh, or Jim, or Scott, or any departments, because okay, you know, we went to something on placemaking. Well, it
doesn't. Oh, sure.
So placemaking among us five, it would be much more effective if we involve the people who actually do the placemaking.
Mm-hmm.
And along that thought, you know.
Well, I was assuming that the department heads would be there and be part of the conversation, too.
Good. Okay.
So we want to do a morning session?
I'm available on Tuesday the 30th. I know that. Or Wednesday the 31st, because I've already taken those days off.
No. Trick or treat, I've got daughters to take around.
Tuesday the 30th, that is good for me. That would be enough time to kind of put it together and set it up.
I want to get chipped out of my candy.
Yeah. Or the day after. And y'all jazzed up from all the candy.
Does the 30th work for other commissioners as well?
Tuesday the 30th would be good for me.
As of right now, well.
Do you have a time that you prefer? Would you prefer it during the day or in the evening?
I would prefer evening, but that's...
I always like morning. But I'll go for evening if
but
everybody
if
else wants
schedule,
evening.
Yeah. Versus the one new me, I do have to...
All right. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Well, I'm just one vote.
I'll go with what you guys want.
I prefer a morning session.
I prefer
myself.
Morning.
Morning or noon. Yeah.
Do you have Tuesdays off automatically, Derek?
No, I take vacation hours for the time I'm here.
See, that's a consideration I think we should kind of be sensitive with regards to.
That's what I do, too, a lot of times. So.
But you've got that Tuesday off?
But I have that. I know I have that Tuesday off.
9.
Well, starting at 7 a.m.
Let's see how productive we are.
Well, it probably won't.
You made us work budget at 7 a.m.
Hey. All I care about is coffee. So.
Would that be a problem?
So I think we're in on the 30th. What time? I'm thinking this could go more than 2 hours, though.
I do, too.
Maybe 8?
Well, let's the first one, let's set a beginning and ending time.
Well,
if you're going to do it in the morning, I would think that'd be wise. If you're going to do it in the evening, I just think you just run until you get tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired. Do it at 3. Do it at 3. That way, it doesn't have to take the whole day.
Are you? What time do you work till?
That's fine. I'll take a couple hours of vacation. That's barring any crises that I'm in.
Never
when I get here.
Yeah, who knows?
Do it.
3 to 5.
Fine with me. I'm looking for a consensus for the commission.
Is 3 better for you than there?
Sure.
What time?
Okay.
We're proposing 3, start at clock at 3, and then run for a couple hours till 5. I'm thinking you might
actually
want to run for 2 hours.
Yeah, blame it on me.
Yeah. 4 help you?
Oh, 3's fine.
Is that good for department heads and everyone
else? Yeah, give a couple hours while they're still working.
Well, I'll go for that.
A motion would be in order because this will be
okay. I'll call for a motion that we have a work session.
And this is open to the public.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Generally, at the work sessions are just like in a regular meeting, except we don't take any action. There's no formal votes.
Right.
If there is a formal vote to come out of that, that would follow up at the subsequent meeting.
Okay. Well, I'll make the motion that we have a work session follow-up in regards to the MML convention and take place October 30th, 3 to 5 p.m. to include staff and commissioners and open to the public. Mm-hmm.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Next item of business is good of the order. Tom?
No.
Shane?
No, I'm okay.
Derek?
I'm just going to follow up on my last comments regarding the dogs and the Veterans Memorial, and Ron appeared very upset that nothing's happened. I haven't heard back on our last conversation. I don't know if police chief has gotten back with you or any input on that issue.
No, not since we talked about it on the island. I did research our ordinances.
Well, no, at our last meeting, the last go to the order where I commented that we should, we find people violating it, financial education opportunity through a ticket. Have you guys seen anything, Chief?
I have a good comment on that.
Okay.
Andy and myself have been over there, Andy more than I have, but we've been over there many times and have not seen any evidence of that at all.
Okay.
Like evidence like it, nothing there ever?
Evidence.
Evidence is evidence.
Evidence means there's something there.
Right.
Well, isn't...
Lack of. Okay.
I was going to bring up the exact same thing, Derek. If there's no evidence, maybe is Ron picking it up? Because he said he and his wife have been cleaning up.
I don't want to speculate.
Maybe they should just call you and call and report it each time. It's
yeah,
that would be good.
Problem
then
because
would,
they're not
we
doing
could
that.
Confirm that it's there.
You get photographs
right,
and
right.
Get general files.
You can track down the dog.
Any dogs? And
okay. I don't want to call Ron names, and I'm not here to do that.
Right.
But we have since the last meeting, we've spent some effort being over there and. No evidence of anything going on.
Well, so his concern of no action's been done would not be accurate. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's what I was wondering. Maybe I need a little education too, and you could help me out here. Do we have any kind of a dispenser over there for that, other than just a regular trash bin or anything that.
There are dispensers in Veterans Park.
In the park itself.
But not right there, that location. I wonder if adding something to that for the public to be noticeable.
Is important.
Pardon?
Ron talked about that space. Someone else should complain about the
There's been other complaints, like at the boat landing and other places, too, in the past.
They're on the walking path, too.
Yeah, I mean.
They're everywhere.
You've got violators everywhere.
You can't stop. It's evident. You can't stop.
They're still going to do it. I mean, it's
the ones that are going to clean it up, they're going to clean it up, and the other ones, they're just going to let it go.
Right.
Yeah. It's always going to be an issue. So, I don't know, unless we want to get one of the little publicity on it more or something. Bring it to people's attention.
It was mentioned there was an article on this topic in the
city
newsletter this summer because we had complaints on this in the past, from animals in the parks, not just specifically this location, the parks. We had complaints about horses on the on the trail on Division Street, the people, and that's a bigger mess for people to deal with. And those folks rarely clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked people to do that. We've provided the dispense. We've increased the number of those significantly over the last few years here at the city. And I think the comment that some people made, people bring their own dispensers with them. I mean, how many people do you see out walking a dog that you see a
bag? Oh, sure.
Yeah, they have
they bring their own plastic.
The Glenn's bag or whatever.
Sure. Yeah,
usually it's
right.
Some other store that they want to defecate in. But
that's right.
They bring them with them. But those are the people that will take care of the issue themselves.
The responsible people,
And part of me thinks, if you put up a dispenser right there from the memorial, is that distracting from the memorial? Or do they think, it's a potty area and then we're providing the things to wipe with?
Yeah, that's another way of looking at it. That's another way of looking at it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that our police department and DPWN are on top of things and made progress.
It's
been addressed.
Not
on top of things, but can't have that. Get them out program. Anyways, any further items for good of the order?
No. No, it's mine.
Okay. Well, announcements. The next regular City Commission is scheduled for Tuesday, October 23rd at noon. It's City Hall here. So call for a motion to adjourn at 10:02.
Second.
Roll call.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.